Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host here for an important deep dive with definitely a star of the Island of Secrets season. And to join me today, we've got two people doing this deep dive. So please welcome someone I've been referring to as Jacques for 17 weeks, and now we can put it to the test, my amazing co-host, Mike Bloom.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here with the Jacques to my Mike Bloom, my long-haired South African doppelganger himself. I don't know. Shannon, it's going to be tough to tell the two of us apart now we have such similar accents.
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing double four Jacques.
Yeah, what you need to do, Shannon, you need to bring Ting Ting online, and then we can really get confused between who's
who. Yeah, it's a real, like, double date deep dive.
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect anything less of Jacques jumping in before he's been introduced as a podcaster.
How dare you!
Please welcome a super fan turn podcaster, as I said, turn standout player on the season, Jacques Berger.
Guys, thank you so much, Shannon, for having me. And Mike Bloom, what a great privilege to be able to podcast with you as well. I'm just really excited to get into this this deep dive of the season.
Yeah,
it's going to be great because going through, you know, I just got over my first deep dive with Nicole, which I had a lot of fun with. But, you know, even though she finished as a runner up, Jacques, you really were just a big focus for pretty much every episode of this season. There was the brief period of time where you even vocalized to us of like, I'm going to go fade into the background just so you know, BRB, I'll be back in a couple of episodes. And yeah, I'd say aside from those two episodes, you had a role to play in every single one of, you know, those 15 episodes that you were in as a player.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting for us as well, you know, podcasting about season six was that we were super aware of what you were doing podcasting about the show. And then the cast came out and it was like, I actually know this guy. Like, that was so interesting, like knowing you from the Survivor fan community, which is always fun. It's happened before as well with Dylan on Survivor New Zealand. And you see these real super fans who live and breathe the game, like get to live their dream. And just from seeing that from the get-go, that warmed my heart.
Yeah, no, definitely, Shannon. Just Mike, yeah, to your earlier point, I told my wife when I came back, I said, honey, listen, obviously she knew I didn't make it. And I just told her, I said, listen, I can only tell you from the moment we set foot on that beach, right up until day 39, I was involved for better or for worse in the game. Great moves, bad moves, whole kit and caboodle. I told her there was this cloud called controversy that just followed me around wherever I went. And that's why it rained on Samoa, because that cloud was following me around. So, yeah, like you say, Shannon, definitely involved. And I'm really excited to get through the season, chat with you guys.
Yeah.
Well, I guess before we get into the season, I would just love to know, because some people might not necessarily know your background, both with the podcast and with the show.
Sure.
So can you talk a bit about like your own history with, I guess, both Survivor at large and Survivor South Africa, and when you started applying for Survivor South Africa as well?
Yeah, I think, and I'm glad you bring that up, Mike. I think in order to understand how I played the game, you need to understand this about me. I watched Survivor a lot when I was growing up. It showed at school, when I was in school. And then, like, this is a classic story. Around about, I think it's between season 18 and 26, around about there, I went studying and obviously got a bit out of touch. Didn't really, you know, I was starting to become an engineer and whatnot. And then I think the first one that I watched live again as it came back was, I think it was just the one just off 21, Brains, Bronze, Beauty, right about there when I came back. And I'm like, whoa, the show is still on. It's still cool. And then they did open casting for Survivor Champions. Me and my friend should have gone, but we ended up partying until 3 o'clock, and they were like, listen, this isn't God. We're not going to choose us. Let's be real. So we missed that one. Then I applied for season six, made a tape. Watching that video back, I actually mentioned this to LaRue. We spoke about it at the after party. And we're both like, listen, it's probably one of the worst audition tapes you'll ever see. So if you want to see a really, really atrocious audition tape, go and watch the one I did for season six. Needless to say, I didn't get on the show. But yeah, Haley.
Why was it so bad though? Now I need to know.
Shannon, I didn't understand what they wanted to see in a tape, if I can just put it as simply as that. I thought I just needed to tell them I love Survivor, I'm a fan of a show, and then they're going to choose me. It was horrible. It was like, it's almost like a slideshow with like voiceover of me speaking, but I did it at like 1 a.m. because I didn't want to wake the people in the house. It was awful.
I demand to see the tape.
And then obviously afterwards I realized, you know, if they see the tape, they want to envision you and be able to transcend you onto a TV screen, if that makes sense. But yeah, I didn't understand at the time. But then I said, we were camping, Hayley and I, and the cast was released. And I look at it and I'm like, none of these people are bad, but I mean, I could be any of those people, right? I could be Seamus, or I could be in the place of Tevin. I mean, he's a doctor and I'm an engineer. There's not really a lot of difference between us. And then I said, no, I need to make a plan, right? So I told Ayla, I said, the two things I'm good at is giving my opinion when people don't want to hear it and talking, you know, about Survivor. So I said, at the time, let's hope nobody's doing any kind of, you know, Survivor podcast thingies. Yeah, no, not at all. And then, you know, after a while, you guys got on board and, yeah, but I made it. And it wasn't like a real podcast even. It was like a YouTube channel. Yeah, I had an RSS feed and some people downloaded it from iTunes podcast. But I told Ailey, I need the people in production to know who I am. I need them to see me for who I am. And I had this long journey to say, if they make another season, and I started tagging players and people from production. And then as it went on, they got a bit of traction. I'm like, wow, you know, a lot of people are watching this. Not like tens of thousands, but there's like, you know, 1,000 hits per view and, you know, people give feedback. And I think it was one episode. I think it was the one where Palesa played an idol and Vivanda played one, the whole idol train thingy. And when the episode said amen, I got a notification on Twitter and it was LaRue, and he said, you know, at Dilem, I can't wait to hear what you guys are going to say about this episode. So I told Ailey, I looked at it and I said, listen, I'm going to be on that season. So then, yeah, I reapplied, made a video again, went to the finale actually last year, you know, met some of the people, reapplied, and then just went through the motion. But I think, yeah, it's important, Mike, to understand, and I know it's a pet peeve of yours, saying people deserve to be on the show, and I'm not saying I deserve to be on the show, but I don't think anybody else has put in the legwork to be on this season, or any season for South Africa Survivor for that matter, that I envision myself to, you know, prove to the people at production that I can be on that season. So yeah, that's what I got on the show.
Mike, is all your podcasting also an elaborate ruse to get on the show? Like, because I'm not trying to get on the show. I like doing this.
I'm getting on Survivor 45. You'll see me there, and you'll see me immediately leave the game. Well, speaking of that, what I find so interesting is, you know, Jacques, you're somebody who then came from the perspective of, you admit, even, you know, no matter how many people were watching it, you were making direct game analysis about these players in season 6 week after week. And now you're going to be entering the season where the tables are going to be turned and the exact same thing is going to be happening your way. And I do really want to commend you for being able to, you know, really take all the good and bad that people have both said about you and has been shown about you on the chin that we'll certainly get into. But did you have any sort of trepidations or thoughts about that as well? Of, okay, now I'm going to be the one, you know, in the hot bird seat with people talking about me.
No, look, I don't say quote unquote live that public eye life. I'm not like somebody like Lisa Rocco or Steffi, who are, you know, let's say semi-famous, let's use that word, who people recognize on the street from other stuff that I did. But there was a cool moment when the first episode or the second episode aired, and I watched Jean-Michel's, I watched her recap thing she did on Instagram. And she's like, yeah, Jacques was always saying how bad I was, and this is my time. And then she's like, I don't really, he looks a bit like he's, you know, trigger happy. And then the thing about that happened. And she's like, yeah, serves him right. He was tuning me. And I'm like, oh, John, come on. So, yeah, we had a bit of fun about that. But no, I wasn't really scared. Obviously, and I'm sure we're going to get to that, the whole MOFA incident, obviously I was concerned how, you know, that's going to be portrayed. And, you know, that's a big, but other than that, no, I was just, I think, I don't know if we can revert back to this, but Mike, to your stuff you did with Island of the Idols, a lot of the stuff that Chelsea said, which is like, I'm so excited to be here, it's a lifelong dream of mine, a lot of that resonated with me. I'm like, yeah, like, she's just grateful to be there, right? She's not a recruit. She's like, she wants this so bad, and she's just so freaking happy to be on the show. And that's pretty much how I felt, you know, from, you know, hearing I was being on the cast until, you know, right up in the end.
Yeah. And how did it feel to get the call that you were going to be on, like, you know, as a super fan, to have that experience? And then how did you prepare for it then going on the show?
Yo, receiving that call, we had a wedding and we got home at like 4 a.m. and I actually missed the call. It was at 7. And I woke up and I'm like 12 o'clock and I see this number and I know it's a production company and I phone it back and nobody's answering. And I WhatsApp the one girl who's, you know, our handler, and I'm like, listen, this is now Saturday. And I say, listen, I got this call, you know, what's it about? And she's like, yeah, don't worry too much about it. We'll speak on Monday. And I just go, oh, are you kidding me? Uh-huh. I have to see her a day and a half and just... But yeah, they phoned me back a couple of days, a couple of minutes later. Obviously, I was super, super stoked. And then I just, as stupid as it sounds, I burst out crying. I'm like, wow, I did it. I actually did it. Whatever happens from now on. Yeah. So then I was super stoked. And every time like something new happened with regards to, you know, the process, I was just taking a step back and I was trying to cram, you know, all this footage into my mind. Like, this is how it's like to be on the boat, and this is what it's like to receive your buff, and this is what your first buff smell like. So I was just like taking every single thing in and just be like, you know, enjoying every single moment, because that's why I went. I wanted to enjoy the game and play it. And I was just extremely grateful and extremely fortunate to have been there. And I was just absorbing every moment of it.
Did you do any sort of, you know, as a big fan, I don't know how much preparation you were doing while you were working through the process, but were you sort of like, great, I'm on. Now let me start studying puzzles and, you know, getting in the gym? Or were you pretty much just like, all right, I'm ready to go. Let's sort of, you wanted to mentally steel yourself above anything.
Yes, I had a slide puzzle app on my phone. We'll get to that later. yeah, I hit the gym a bit, but I'm not really a guy who works out. I do more like running and that kind of stuff instead of bulking up. And I quit my job like when I was far along in the process and I got a sense that I might be on. I quit my job. I just spent the last like month chilling at home doing some freelance work. Yeah, I just wanted to get in like the right headspace, not necessarily because I knew enough of the show. I didn't rewatch any seasons. I know a lot of people like rewatched, you know, American Survivor or season 6. No, I didn't rewatch anything. I was like, I know enough. I just need to be not over the edge, you know. They want. I don't need, you know, run around like a mad person, like a Sheamus or like a Jacob Durbin. I just need to play it cool, and that was just my strategy to just, you know, take time and get in the right headspace.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to the island. So you get into a season called Island of Secrets. I'm not quite sure, you know, when you found out in the process that that would be the theme of the season. But what was your reaction to that? You know, Island of Secrets sound foreboding. It's also a little bit vague. But what was your reaction to that being the twist of the season?
The Island of Secrets was actually announced during the finale last year. I was there. So right. I'm like, whoa, Island of Secrets, this is cool. So in my head, I envisioned it something like a ghost island, which it actually, you know, in retrospect, you know, both in terms of the island and in terms of the gameplay, close correlation. but yeah, so I imagine that it's going to be like this place. And in my mind, I prepared a lot more for, I thought they were going to use it a lot more for like, let's say, cross-tribal pollination, like send two people from each tribe, you know, always like that in the Millennials versus Gen X where they got the summit or something. I thought it's going to like a lot more than that, especially on the first day when they sent three people from different tribes. So I thought it was always going to be like this outpost place where different people are going to get together. Mm-hmm. So I imagined in my mind, keep track of who goes, and you can, you know, imagine what kind of relationships they are forming so you can form your strategy around that. So that's what I envisioned, you know, during the planning process.
So you had a really complicated relationship with Kubus, and it starts off very quickly when they say, okay, elect a leader of your tribe, you know, ends up becoming Kubus, and he picks you out as who he feels is the weakest member of the tribe. And we'll certainly get to how you were able to utilize that position to your betterment. But how did you guys stumble upon picking Kubus, and did you have any sort of reaction one way or the other to being outed so early on as the quote unquote weakest member of the tribe?
Yo, Mike, that's a brilliant question. Kubus and I, while we were doing the initial footage on the boat, we got a good vibe, and I saw him on the airport, and he looked really cool. So I was like, Kubus, this guy looks nice, and obviously I don't want to be the leader of that whole thing. And everybody was like, unanimously, it's just Kubus. And when Kubus had to choose somebody, he looked at me, and this isn't very well shown on the episode, but he looked at me, and he was almost like he was trying to telegraph something to me. And he's like, Jock, you have to understand why I'm doing this, but I'm choosing you. So I looked at him like, okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down. So I think Kubus also knows a bit about the game, and I think he was going to envision something, you know, this person is going to be sent to the Island of Secrets or being, you know, responsible for a challenge or something like that. So, and we spoke about it afterwards as well. We said, listen, I would have chosen Tanya or Ting Ting. I knew that person was going to have to do something, and obviously not the big guy, but you look like you got a head on your shoulders. And I was trusting you to understand that. And I'm like, Kubus, dude, I understood what you meant. So, yeah, we had that whole, a little bit of a sly look and understanding. But yeah, then he chose me. And we'll circle back to the old my Corbis. We had a very nice cat and mouse game in the beginning. But yeah, then I get chosen, and obviously I told this to Niku when he's like, Jacques, are you surprised? I said, no, not at all. I said, this is the story of my life. You know, I walk into a new office and people are like, yo, who the hell are you? You don't, you know, look like you need to be here. And then, you know, a week in, I'm like, okay, everybody's coming to me to find out how this system works. So I said, I've been there so many times before that it almost felt natural to me to be the underdog or the weak, you know, the quote unquote weakest guy in the tribe.
Yeah. And then in leading the challenge, obviously, you know, that was a huge one for you, and you found the advantage. Yeah. So what was your perspective there right at the top of the tower to find that?
Yeah, look, so, it was so difficult for me because obviously, you know, whatever, if you look at it like sequentially, the things that were the closest to us was like the fruit baskets and stuff like that. And then the second level was like, you can see like building equipment and ropes. So obviously it incrementally got better. So I didn't even think it was going to be like an advantage for personal gain. I just thought it's going to be like, you know, waterproof matches or flipping, you know, when you get this, you're the top back at home. So I'm like, whatever is at the back, it's got to be the scarcest or the rarest, right? And there's only one and it's hidden. So obviously, for me, it's like a no-brainer. I mean, why wasn't everybody running towards that one? But yeah, then I got it. And as I received it, I like, oh, this is a bag of sand. And I realized, oh, shit, I know what this is. This is some kind of advantage. So I, you know, open it up and I look inside and I see it's an advantage. Now, you can't, I don't want to read it there. So, you know, that's where the park it down south line came about, where I'm just like, I'm just going to sever my pants, throw away the bag of sand. I mean, I think I always hit a camera. I was just, you know, chucking it like right off the screen. I was getting this as far away as possible. And then afterwards, our whole tribe was like, yo, we didn't do bad. We did good. And I was like, guys, we actually killed it. We got a lot more than they did. We ran further. We got more rounds, but you don't want to say what we got. So I was just, and then I realized actually that, looking from outside in, like Rob mentioned, we got a bit of a, it looks like we got the science fair, I think that's the word he used. But then I'm like, yeah, this is actually a group of people who, you know, we can go a long way if we stick together. Stoked, super happy.
Well, one of those people was Tanya. And it's crazy to say, because that's another person that you had a very complicated relationship with, especially with the way that things ended. But starting off, I mean, we talked about it in the first episode. We really got this big edit of how Tanya is just off the wall. She's making alliances with everybody. She's bringing up these really weird stories about her dad. How true was that edit? You know, what were things truly that wacky out there on the island?
Mike, I wanted to take two steps back. During the final panel interview at Mnet, they're like, you know, Jacques, what really pisses your button? What can you not stand? What tilts you? And I say, you know, when people say things that's not true. And I'm not talking about religious or like your sexual orientation. I'm like, if you come at me and like, yo, I'm a Sagittarius, I can't really do this or that. I'm like, listen, dude, you're dead to me. I can't handle this. And they all nod at me like, oh, okay, cool. And we get there, right? And it's like the first 5 seconds. And that's the whole thing where you see where we're all speaking, our whole tribe is married or in relationships. And Tanya's like, yeah, she's not married. And she's like, yeah, I'm a Leo. You know, we are free people. We don't like to be locked down. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I told you guys, and I knew that. I'm like, I told you guys, this is the one type of person I don't want to play the game with, but obviously like, they do that on purpose. Like you said, we had Tanya, and the stories were bizarre. A lot of them not TV friendly, not family friendly at all. Very liberated individual, Tanya. But at the same time, and we can speak about that later, she was a very much a different person later in the game. But in that first 3, you know, days, she was running around. We all knew she was looking for an idol. She was saying all these weird things. You know, we were a group of people who, although we were younger than her, we were all in like serious long-term relationships or married or, you know, and she was just about, yeah, you guys shouldn't have been married young. You should test the waters, you know, go out there, live your life. And
you're like a little bit late for that, actually. I'm kind of tied down right now.
Yeah, Meryl's like, well, I got 3 kids. What do I do now? Send them back. I think it's not that I think Tanya was, you know, we didn't necessarily ostracize her, or I just think we didn't have that chemistry with her that the rest of us had. We had like, everybody was like more or less on the same page, and she was just, you know, the 7th person that didn't really gel with our group very well.
Yeah, I want to find out more about these Ta'alo relationships because, you know, it becomes a justice for Ting Ting plan. You have long-term, you know, relationships, good and bad, with these people. So who were you really connecting with from the beginning?
Listen, one thing I want to say, and I don't know if this was by chance or if it's if you know the psychiatrist and LaRue, you know, socially engineered this, but there were, let's take Tanya quickly out of the equation, the six remaining people. There were three, I want to say, quote unquote, if you use survivor terms, white collar workers in the engineer, the doctor, and the architect, right? Mm-hmm. And there were three, quote unquote, blue collar workers in a salesman, a surfer dude who runs a coffee shop, and Meryl is a Pilates instructor. And from the get-go, those two groups gravitated towards one another very early on. And it was evident to everybody. And it almost came this, it was like we were, every day we were silently building down this brick wall between us of, we know Tanya is the first one out, but after that, it's a free-for-all. And we all knew that. Nobody ever said it, but we laid down this invisible wall. And it's interesting because that was our plan, and that's the people I was comfortable with, and that's the people Meryl was comfortable with. But we knew that. But at some point in time, I think Tanya, when she started running, telling Meryl this alliance, and she's got that one, and Jock, worry about this. Meryl was starting to get paranoid, and I told her, I said, Meryl, listen to me, Meryl. Tanya's causing this frustration. Why are us three and you three ganging up against one another when the problem is obviously Tanya, the seventh individual? So let the six of us form a strong battery. We put down this wall between, instead of putting it down between us, let's put it down between Tanya, and then the six of us can work together. And that was almost like a pivotal change in the way our group operated, or our tribe operated, where as soon as we all realized that and somebody verbalized it, we all took a step back and said, okay, yeah. And then we were super cohesive. And it was like, it was honestly one of the best weeks of my life. It was pouring rain that first week. I can explain to you, I mean, we couldn't get like even a timber going with that flint we later got. But it was so fun when we realized if we six of us just stay together, you know, we'll be fine.
So, I mean, one of those people, it's so interesting that you bring up your Kubis relationship before and how, you know, it seemed like he was trying to set up. My survivor history in my mind indicates like a David Samson and Garrett Adelstein type of thing of like, I'm going to purposely pick you for this. It's not that I'm actually targeting you. And then you also have sort of a mini worlds apart thing going on in your tribe as well. So lots of survivor history reverberating.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kubis comes back from iOS and he says, all right, I'm going to share the clue with you. And this
no. You. Mike, sorry to interrupt you. I'm being very rude, but there's something you can go back and watch episode one. Kubis comes back with a note, with three mail, right? He got three mail on the island. And we're super stoked to see Kubis. I'm super stoked, you know. And he comes back with the note, and he opens the note, and it says something in the likes of, welcome to Survivor, enjoy your day well. And it's like, I'm reading it, but my brain is like, Jock, there's something here. You're not picking it up. The red lights are going. Like, Jock, focus. There's something here. And I take the note, and I say, enjoy your day well. And I realize, okay, there's something at the well. I mean, it's standing right in the note. Now, I don't want to say anything. Obviously, I want to try to play cool. And Kubis looks us up, and he's like, he looks at us all, and he's like, so guys, where's the water well? And my heart just sank. I'm like, he tells us he got nothing. I saw
so he got a separate note about the well, or he tore it off the clue?
No. It's like on the tree mail. So he got the advantage. He got the advantage that he received, right? You know, he's, you know, when he could choose a flint or a clue, he took the clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on tree mail itself,
okay,
it said, enjoy your day well.
Right. So, I'm pretty sure it was like the note that they found when the three guys actually got to Island of Secrets.
Yeah, no.
No, but then the tribes as well got another note saying, enjoy your day well. That would explain why Letitia also was looking around the well.
No, but it said something like, welcome to Survivor, enjoy your day well, build a shelter for the rainy spell, tomorrow you go to immunity, or something like that. So it was like the first tree mail our whole tribe received. But in there, it mentioned the word well. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now I'm on high alert that Kubis is lying to us, because he doesn't ask us about the shelter, he doesn't ask about anything, he asks about the well. Okay, so every single time for the first 3 days, whenever Kubis wants to go to the water well, I'm tagging along with him, I'm following him, and he's trying hard to give me shake. He's like, no, I want to go alone. I'm like, dude, I need to get water, let's go at the water well, and then you can split. He's like, okay, fine. So it becomes this weird cat and mouse game where I know he knows and he knows I know, but I don't want to say he knows. During the first two nights, like when I got this, I'm like, okay, it's at the well. So I spend middle of the night, hours, like going through. And it's pitch dark. It's rainy. So there's no sunlight or moonlight coming down. I can't even see where it is. I'm just there with a cameraman, and I'm digging up that well all around it. And I think it's the morning of the third day, and this mic is when Kobus gives about the clue. And I'm really wish I showed this because such a cool moment. I go to Kobus, and I realize time is ticking because everybody's now starting to wonder where is the idol, and you know maybe Tanya has it. And I pull Kobus aside, and I say, Kobus, you and I need to have a conversation. And he says, you're like a jockey. What about? And I say, oh, well. And he says, well, well. And I say, well, well, well. So then he's like, yeah, Joe, get me at the water well. And then the two of us missioned there. And I'm like, Kobus, I know there's something here. And he's like, how do you know? And from the top of my head, I say, no, when I was on top of that stand during the first challenge, there was a clue. There was a water well with a picture towards it, like an arrow drawn towards a water well. And he's like, okay, so you know about this too. And then he shows me the clue. And obviously I've searched the whole proximity around the well. And it says you have to dig at noon. And there's a sundial on the water well. And I realized, okay, it's directly underneath. But now I need to throw Kobus a red herring. And I need to get a decoy out. And I say, yeah, this noon thing, Kobus, to me, it means it's a tree, right? I mean, trees grow straight up. It's like the noon finger on the watch. And he's like, yeah, that's so smart, Jock. And he starts looking at the trees. And that's when I just, you know, dig right underneath and I found it. So yeah, a very fun moment between me and Kobus. And yeah, we joke about it now a lot, but it was really like a weird game of cat and mouse initially between me and him.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I guess to quote well, well, well. That's just so, wow, that's wow, so well. Funny. So, I mean, this is when you start, you know, building your armory. I know that you had hid it away in the jungle. Did you have any thoughts that somebody might stumble upon it instead of you deciding to, you know, put those advantages in your own bag like some other Survivor contestants might?
No, funny you mentioned this, Mike. When I, you know, everybody was getting gathering bamboo and people were running around. And when I got around the corner and everybody could see me, I just ran like really fast. And I ran, and I think I went like out of bounds of where we should be, but I just kept running until I stopped. And I'm like, okay. And then I opened up the advantage. I saw it was an extra vote. I was so disappointed. I'm like, an extra vote? Are you kidding me? At merge? I mean, with 20 people, merch is going to be like at 10 or 12. What? How do I switch to 8? I'm like, come on, guys, you're going to be something better. But then I hide it and I come back. And when I get to idle and I want to go back, I can't find that spot. And I'm like, guys, come on. And it's this whole thing. And eventually they radio back one of the producers, and you know, that person pulls the tape and they're like, okay, it's around about there. And then they send them like a picture of where it is. So actually I got so lost in the jungle that I couldn't remember where I put it, or I couldn't find that exact same spot. But yeah, finally I hit it. No, I think I hit it so far off the beaten track, Mike. There was no way someone would stumble upon it unless they like followed me. Because I mean, I couldn't even remember where I placed it. So no, none of that was ever confirmed for me.
Yeah, well, you've explained the dynamics onto Arlo, and you were, you know, saved from the first couple of tribal councils. You had a big hand in that in some regards, and Saulo going to tribal council. And then we get to episode 3, a vote that will never be spoken about on any podcast again after that. And, yes, you know, you've got the six of you, as you said, against Tanya, and then Island of Secrets throws a spanner in the works, and then it's just chaos. So talk us through that vote.
Yo, that's the correct word to sum it up, Shannon. Absolute chaos. Look, when we cut back, usually Nico says, okay, Tanya, going back, she will return in time for the next immunity challenge or the next reward challenge. But she said, Tanya will return at a later time. It was like a weird change in what Nico usually said. And I picked up on that. So we went back and it's like late afternoon. And obviously, like you go to tribal the day that you do the vote, right? Or the day that you lose the challenge. And it's like, it's getting late. And And eventually we realized, okay, we're not going to tribal council tonight. It's probably going to be tomorrow. And then it was actually a beautiful night that night. It's the first time the rain cleared up. And the six of us, we just lay under the stars, and it was such a magical moment. And it's one of us, if I can take like the essence of a show and put it in my heart, the six of us just lying there, I will remember that. Yo, it was such a cool moment. But then I told Ting Ting, I said to her, listen, Tanya's not going to come back. So we need to preemptively make a plan. And Ting Ting and I, we got along well. And there was this very cool, sorry to sidetrack again, Shannon, but there was this very cool moment between me and Ting Ting where she told all of us she worked at like a Chinese import company, and she told us her parents import TVs from China, and she's in the LCD department. And I mean, what's not to believe about the story? You know, the Chinese girl on the team whose parents import TVs from China. We're all like, okay, that makes sense. But after that puzzle challenge, I look at Ting Ting and we come back and I tell her we're alone on the beach. And I tell her, Ting Ting, you don't work in TV imports. So what do you do? Are you a doctor? Are you a veterinarian? Are you an attorney? Just tell me. And she's like, okay, Jacques, I'll tell you I'm a doctor. And I say, well, that's cool. So that almost like solidified our trust when like nobody knew what she did, but I knew and we were like open cards about it. And then the next day I told her, listen, Tanya's not going to come back. So here's what we got to do. We need to make a plan. And then we decide who do we want to take out. And we decided to take out Kubis just because our argument was that's the easiest person to come back and say, guys, he lied about the Flint. He got the idol. It wasn't up front of us. That was the least disruptive to with the Isle of Family.
Yeah, and if it had been three versus three, then at least maybe the other three will go with it rather than, you know, one of the two of you.
Exactly. And then Tanya comes back. I mean, Tanya and Ting Ting had a great relationship as well. Tanya and I, we had our ups and downs, but I knew, you know, we could explain it to her and she would understand. So that's our plan. And then when the message comes in that like Tanya's not going to be here, Ting Ting and I, we were like, oh, wow, this is brand new information. We didn't know this. But then obviously we had our plan ready and I looked at Meryl and I just silently make like a T with my finger and I go, are we going Ting Ting? And everybody goes like, yeah. And Ting Ting also, she couldn't swim very well. During that first challenge, she almost drowned. Dante had to go back. I also didn't show this. Dante had to go back and rescue her.
Classic Aquaman.
The producers were like rallying the divers. And Dante's like, no, get out of the way. I'll go get her. And Dante goes back and he brings her out of the water. It was such a funny moment.
Dante on like day 30 would have let them drown instead.
Yes, Dante would be like, you know, screw you guys. I want to go alone. I'll leave you all here to die. Exactly. And we have this plan and I told her like, just tell her it's me. I don't care. And you know, she felt like everybody's like, okay, cool. So we got to vote for Jock and yeah, okay. And, she and I have our plan ready and we convinced Kubis to leave his clothes because that was something I really wanted to do to get his jacket. It's like 20 seconds before we walk out, Ting Ting comes to me and she's like, Jock, it's a bluff. They're not really going for me. They're coming for you. And I go, what? And then we walk out and we go to the driveway. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? So now my mind is spinning and it's this, you know, it's the first time you go to tribal. And then we were at tribal. Everybody's like, yeah, we're voting for Ting Ting. It's sad that it has to be her. And I'm like, guys, why are we telling the person who we're voting out? Why are we telling her it's her? This makes no sense. I mean, at least like play that it's me, right? I thought that was the plan. We're going to tell her we're doing me. And then at tribal, they say, no, we're doing Ting Ting. And I'm like, shit, now they maybe are doing me. Now I'm super confused because the plan was tell her we're voting me. I can just play dumb. Now the tribal saying they're voting her. And now I'm getting very confused. I do this bit, which wasn't shown in the edit. It would have been horribly embarrassing. I want to thank Leroux from the bottom of my heart for not putting it into the edit. There's this part where I got the advantage from extra vote. And before we vote, I'm like, Nico, I have this advantage. I have to play it now. First vote. I know it's not going to do anything, but I have to play it anyway. I can only use it now. And everyone's like, what? So I play it, and I just give it to Nico. And Nico's like, this is not an advantage. This is nothing. This thing's empty, Jock. Go sit down. You're wasting our time. And everybody's like, Jock, what are you doing? I'm like, we have to play it. And I'm like, there's nothing in it. I'm like, guys, I don't know what's going on. Let's just vote. And everybody's like, okay. So I was in such a weird space. I was like a whole mess.
You were basically like dumping out your bag, like, okay, Nico, is this thing? Can I use this now? No? Okay, what about this?
Yeah, what currency do you take at this tribal council?
Exactly. It was so rough. We vote and we come back and the plan is foolproof. And I stand up and I'm like, and Ting Ting shoots up a hand. I'm like, okay, well, now we have to do it. We're jumping in with both feet. And I stand up, I take out the idol and Meryl's jaw. It's the ground, like really hard. Like you can hear it, like clung. And I'm like, what? And I look at Meryl and she is so scared. The bewilderment in her eyes is like, wow, how, why, what's happening? And then I'm like, well, if they're not laughing at me, if they were like laughing, I would have been cool. But now they're like scared. And I'm like, they really are coming for me. Then I do probably one of the worst moves in Survivor. You see, we'll get to that later, but, Maba did me real solid by, you know, bumping that one down to number two. Worst move of the season by far. Playing it for myself, looking like an idiot, sending Ting Ting home, my closest ally. Nobody trusted me. It was just on that night, on the way back home and the following days, I was like so embarrassed and so like, how did I not see this coming? I was just like, oh guys, this is the worst thing. It was really bad.
Talk to me about that sort of debrief, because we see at the beginning of episode 4, and yeah. So, I mean, understandably, you have the whole tribe coming after you being like, where did that come from? And I guess exactly. Considering you were pulling out everything but the kitchen sink, you were, it makes sense. Why you're
did you play
like,
the kitchen sink at this one?
I wanted to, you know, kind of give him my hat, kind of give him my pink shirt. No, listen, Mike, nobody in this planet of 8 billion people have relived that tribal council as many times as I have, right?
Island, we've spoken about it a lot.
Yeah, but maybe except for you too. But look, the best play would have been, right? The best play would have been, let me tell you what the play is. And obviously hindsight is 20/20. In Survivor, I say hindsight is 50/50 because you still don't know. But I should have told Ting we vote for Kobus, right? And I'm going to vote Kobus as well. Then I should have given her the idol, right? I go up and I don't write down Kobus' name. I write down Ting as well, right? She comes, she plays idol. We send Kobus home. She and I knows we're good. I have her back and I can just say, guys, I voted for Kobus for Ting as well. And then it's like 5-1. And she says to herself, I'm just going to be angry with Ting for saving herself. Lower my threat level. She and I are solid. And that would have been the best play. But during this debriefing process, Mike, this happened so much in the game where I hit rock bottom and I take like an hour to just sit and bitch and moan about my life and, you know, really feel bad for myself. But then I'm like, okay, listen, it's not the end of the world. Plant, you know, pull yourself back up. What's the next play? And I'm like, okay, well, I know where the idol is. So if there's a swap coming up, the next play is I just go to wherever the island is, find their idol. Maybe they haven't gotten it. Maybe they didn't understand where it is, especially if it's a Lame one because Rocker didn't take the clue. And I tried to mend fences with the people as best as I could. But I think, and Dante and I spoke about this at the reunion, I think what happened there is our tribe essentially fractured. Where it was clear that, you know, Ting Ting and I, we did our own thing. Dante then didn't want to go along. I didn't trust them. So we could have been the quote unquote amigos, but our tribe fractured that night. But it was like, I just need to pull myself back up and get myself back in the game. And it was as simple as that for me.
And what we were shown on the show was that, you know, your votes weren't shown because of the way that the votes are stacked for International Survivor. And they obviously thought you'd be playing the idol on Ting Ting. And then like Kobus would be the shock votes at the end. So are you transparent with the tribe about who you had voted for?
No, I told them I voted Ting Ting as well.
Right.
It was very lucky that it wasn't shown. But I think like there was no chance of like everybody, I mean, production obviously know who has idols and what the plan is going to be before we go into tribal council. So I don't think anybody in the whole world expected me to play that idol for myself.
Yeah. Well, so in the US, Jeff has like a more innovative system of vote stacking so that if things are switched up, like he can take it from different compartments or something. But International Survivor, like they just have to go with what they think.
I think they're just like, well, we go from top to bottom. That was the plan. Yeah. Similar to later on the season when I voted Rob during the one where Maba didn't play idol, that Rob vote wasn't shown as well. Because I think they were so sure Maba was going to play idol. They just, you know, stack all the Maba votes in front. And whoever comes out last, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So whether it's intentional, I cannot say to you.
No. It makes a lot of sense that it's just like they just needed different compartments in the voting urn. Like that's all. Yeah.
Well, they had something in the lid that they could pull something out of, so we know that there was a possibility there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's get to the swap here. Let's move to chapter 2 of Jacques' game, as you put it, because here you are. Okay. You get your wish. You manifested switching over to Lame. You end up doing so. You find the idol. But what I'm really intrigued to ask about, especially over these next couple of episodes, is your relationship with Felix, because you approach him directly and say, I have the idol. And then, of course, you get into a little bit of a conflict with him because he says, OK, I want you to give me the idol so I can determine who to use it on. So talk to me a bit about, I guess, your relationship with Felix and then how that sort of conflict broke down.
Yeah, look, I think you have to understand, like, Felix and I, it's probably the person on our tribe who I got along with the least, except maybe for Tanya initially. Felix is a very much a... he's very much, I want to say, like a brawny guy, like, yo, we're all going to go to the gym. We're going to be like, you know, we're playing rugby. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool, dude. I played rugby as well. And then he'd say, yeah, but you didn't play on the level that I played. And then the conversation just dies down. You understand what I'm saying? So him and I, even though we have a lot in common, we never really connected. And I could see that he was shifty of me as well, because Felix is not a dumb guy by no means. But I think you could see from him, he's like, They put Dante on because he's big. They put Meryl on because she's sweet and charming. Why did they put Jacques on the show? There's something about him, and he was very sketchy of me right from the get-go. It's like he wouldn't want me to get close to him. And that was evident for me that he really didn't trust me. So after the first mess-up of thinking, you know, obviously nobody in our tribe trusts me. And I realized, you know, Felix obviously doesn't trust me either. But for me, when I looked at what I look at how the tribe broke down, if you look at, they had two Lamaes, original Lamaes in Dorao and Rosalie, you know, two Ta'alos and Sipay. But when we switch tribes for the first time, nothing stops Felix from going and being like, hey, Sipay, Dorao, listen to me, this Jock guy, can't trust him. Last night, played an idol, screwed up the whole plan. We need to get this guy out right now. You understand what I'm saying? So nothing stops him from doing that. And I know there's a lot of people, you know, tell people about the idol, don't tell people about the idol, the pros and cons. But for me, I knew that Felix and I, you know, we're not tagged along for the long haul. I need to get him out, but I need to get him on my side as well. And if I show him the idol, one, it brings back a little bit of trust. And two, it stalls him on making a move on me, right? Because like, he's not going to go off to go with an idol, not after I've played it as well last night. So I told him that in a bit to buy time and be like, yo, okay, what's our objective? Make sure we get a grip on the tribe, you know, in terms of being purple strong with me, Tanya and him, and then maybe rope in one of the other people with Sipay, and then we can take out Felix. So I always maintain this, and we'll get back to this later. And I said this during the show, if you play an idol tonight, you go home the next vote anyways. For me, that's useless. But if you can use the idol to broker a relationship that's going to, you know, be advantageous for you for 2 weeks' time, I take that over a single idol that nobody knows about any time of the day. So that was my motive, and that's why I told him. But yeah, like you said, it was a conflict situation. Then he wanted it back, and I'm like, I didn't anticipate him asking me for this, and I'm panicking. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, dude, no. And then it's like you said in your discussion, Mike, it comes off, it's not what I'm saying it's bad, it's how I'm saying it. Well, I tell him, you know, there's right. No chance that I'm going to give it to you. Draw a line of sand, and that's maybe not the most diplomatic way to have done it, but I still maintain that my decision in opening up to him was a correct one.
Yeah, well, people always say on Survivor, they're like, especially in the preseason, now I'm in 39 preseason, people are like, you should never tell anyone about your idol. Yeah. And I've never agreed with that because, I mean, most things in Survivor are situational anyway. And I think there's also a lot of merit, depending on the situation, to telling people about your idol, to using it beyond exactly. just yeah. safety. How can it work for relationships? I guess it was more just like how Felix felt about you and your relationship yeah. then that was the issue. But as you said, you know, you come into the tribe with these new people as well. You know, Rosalie is going to go home soon. But Sipay and Dorao are the two main ones, two people you have very important long-term connections with. So what was it like yeah. you know, meeting and bonding with them?
Look, immediately Dorao and I, we got along well. Dorao, he's a very humble guy. You know, he's not the big talker. He's not all about the image and the fashion. And he's just like, he's a down-to-earth nice guy. So we had like really good conversations. And him and I, we'd go crab hunting, and when we, you know, learn this trick of where the crabs hide, and we'd learn that if you like hit the trunk of a tree and it vibrates so much, they run out, and then like we do this thing where he hits one end and they come out, and we had a lot of fun actually, Dorao and I. And then like we'd bring back the crabs, and Sipay would, you know, she teach us how to kill the chicken and how to do that. So I got a much better personal connection. Forget game plan strategy, just personal connection with Dorao and Sipay versus somebody like Rose Lee. It's purely at that point in time, you need people as simple as the sounds. You need people who you like to play the game with. I mean, if you're going to, you know, form an alliance or form a strategic partner, get somebody you can at least, you know, have a good relationship with.
Well, so at what point was it in the cards for you to say, okay, it's going to be my plan to pick up Dorao here? Because in episode 5, after Rosalie goes, is when you approach him and officially sort of make, I wouldn't say a final three deal, but you sort of solidify yourself as a duo, which, you know, definitely has long-term ramifications.
Yeah, look, I think Dorao is, I saw somebody who, he was a nice guy, but he wasn't the strategic mastermind, right? Sipay, no. I love Sipay, like as an individual. But Sipay was smart. So I was like, I would take Sipay to 6, and then you have to cut the roundabout there. But I would take the route all the way to the end, and I realized that very soon. Other people did as well. So when the Rosalie thing happened, I told him, listen, Dorao, you and me, you know, And I almost like, and I played it up like, yo, I saved your life. But I'm like, bro, listen, you know, I told you I'd have you back. I told you you were safe. Don't have to worry about it. We're doing Rosalie. Stick with her. I promise you're safe. And then you and I, we go further down the road. And he said, well, that's great. Thanks, Jacques. I mean, that's what I need right now. And I said, sure. So it's almost like, you know, me saving him and then he returning favor, being like, okay, well, you know, I'm now with you. And so what happened is later that day, Dorau came to me and he's like, listen, Felix wants to vote you out. And then like 5 minutes later, Tanya says, listen, Felix is planning to make a move on you. Just be aware of that. So it sort of worked out where, like, you know, I saved Dorau's life and he gave me the intel to get the preemptive strike on Felix going. Yeah, but that's how it happened, Mike.
Yeah, so, you know, Felix here, that's going to be the vote. Obviously, there's also this really long slide puzzle challenge that Felix is not happy about. And there was a lot of stuff that came out about production, whether the puzzle was solvable, and then apparently it was reset. So tell us from the beach what happened there.
Listen, there's no way I can give my honest opinion and still maintain a good relationship with Eminent and okay. production people. No, look, I think we all saw what happened. And they did reset it. That is true. Actually, like after reset, I'm like, okay, well, they figured it out. But after reset, back to exactly the same position. And then that's that. I mean, I practiced it beforehand. I could literally do it in less than 5 seconds. But on the day, I just couldn't. So I think it sucks what happened, but at the same time, while that was happening, and obviously everybody had a go at it. I mean, I was there, but you know, Sipe jumped in, Doral jumped in, Tanya jumped in. The only one who was just like backseat driving the whole time was Felix. And at the point, I was like, "Yo, Felix, you can come and try this, dude. I mean, come." And it's like, no, I don't want to try. You say you're the puzzle guy. You should be the puzzle guy. And I think what was, it's almost like the Sandra Diaz Twine strategy with anybody but me. When he, you know, verbalized his disdain for our tribe. And, you know, he was like, I'm standing there and he goes to Dante and he's like, yo, Dante, can I just be on your tribe? This tribe, you just, I don't want to be with these people anymore. We all look at one another and we're like, come on, guys. I mean, we all know what you have to do, right? And then everybody was on board. I think like for Tanya, it was simple because she's like, well, she's maybe the one to go next, so why not her? And then everybody was just like, yeah, okay, it's a matter of principle. And yeah, that led to everybody being almost galvanized against Felix and deciding this is the person we have to take out next.
I can imagine that sort of is also maybe sort of a unifying factor. As someone will say later on about you, a common enemy really helps unite people. And so exactly. Felix was sort of that common enemy because going into episode 6, this is when we see the formation of the Misfits, and it's also particularly where you decide to reveal your extra vote first, and then later on you do end up revealing your idol. So I guess what led you to reveal, you know, your second armory to the rest of the tribe, and what led you to only say the extra vote instead of the both in that moment?
So initially I wanted to, like I said earlier, there's a way to group people together. So initially I told them about the extra vote, right? I told when we were the band of Misfits, the four of us, I showed them the extra vote. And I'm like, guys, you know, this is what I have. And once again, it's one of those things where I wanted to plant the seed in everybody's mind that if we make the merge and you have me on your side, you're bringing two numbers with you. And, you know, everybody knows a merge vote is always a very pivotal vote or a very telling vote. So it's very low risk. I didn't tell them I can give it to somebody else if I'm voted out, because that's like the fine script at the bottom that nobody saw. I just told them.
Yeah, didn't even show that on the show. So I was like, I bet you that doesn't come into play.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, thanks for the spoiler, production.
Well, I don't think the production doesn't think that we're going to be this nerdy about it. Like, that's the thing. Like, no one should be thinking like this.
No, for sure. But yeah, so for me, it was a very easy way. I mean, if people know you have an extra vote and it's a one-time thing and you only have to use it at merge, and if you come with, you have two extra people, they're not going to be like super scared of you. They might know you're a bit of a crafty player, but at least they're going to like, well, if we can tag this guy along, we are an extra vote. I mean, that's helpful in whatever alliance we're forming. So that was initially my plan, you know, once again, not just using it, not only in its intended purpose, but to weaponize it a bit in a social way. And then what happened is we had that donut challenge, and it was the hardest day we had in Fiji up until then. And it was a very, very physical challenge, very hot, and people were really they were like giving everything. I mean, in the one side you have Steffi and Kurbis. I mean, Kurbis played hockey professionally, Steffi to fit this model. On the other side, you're going up against Rocco and Rob. I mean, Rocco is a professional javelin athlete. Rob is huge. And then in the middle, it's like, you know, Dodo Music and Jacques and Dural. I mean, if you gave odds of, you know, what's our chance of winning that challenge? I think 10-1, people would have said, I'll take it. They would have, you know, made the 10% return on investment. But yeah, we actually won the challenge. And then I realized, well, you know, we had a couple of puzzles. We won this one. We can actually win if the stars align for us for some reason, we can win because we, as stupid as this sounds, we had a lot of heart in the between the four of us to actually, you know, make some plays. So yeah, I must say this about Tanya. I mean, Tanya changed from night to day during the first week we saw her. And how she was in that second week, she was a different person. And Sipay loved her. I loved her. The round she was tight. We were really close, the four of us. And then, yeah, I thought to myself, well, if I can, you know, serve as idol, and then we can really solidify this four and say, well, the four of us, we've been through blood, sweat, and tears. Not to quote Winston Churchill, but we've been through blood, sweat, and tears. If we can go on, we could actually make this a thing deep into the game. And I mean, everybody was on board. And I said, okay, well, sure, guys, this, let me tell you about your idol. And then that sort of like, we were all in. And yeah, we had a banner. We were united. We were ready to go to war. And unfortunately, we had a casualty that night, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wasn't cheering for the Misfits in that challenge. Definitely like a David versus Goliath thing. It was just like really unfortunate that the Misfits had to lose at that challenge. And then you're kind of like having to have this public conversation about who should go home. So what was your thought process through that vote?
Look, I was still scared that that they might turn on me. I mean, like I said, once again, nothing stops Ipe and the Rao. And one thing I want to... Not blaming the edit. I don't want to do that ever. But I think one thing the edit didn't show, and you can speak maybe with her, get her perspective, but Sipay and I got really close during that time on Lamay. I mean, Sipay, she's a phenomenal woman. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I loved her as for who she is. She was such a cool person. It's difficult to explain to me how to verbalize Sipay's love and her character, but she and I connected. We had mutual respect. I could speak a little bit of Sipedi, which is the language she speaks. So she and I would, you know, chat a little bit, not enough that the cameras would be like, yo, speak English, but just enough that I can greet her formally and be like, good morning, Sipay, how did you sleep? And we had mutual respect for one another. But yeah, then it became, she was actually the one who sat down and said, listen, okay, we need to do this. I was very fortunate because, you know, and then everybody, you know, open forum style, gave her inputs. It became clear that it's Tanya. Obviously, she's going to start running around. I was scared that she might sway them. But after my conversations with Dural and Sipay, I realized, listen, we're all good. I said this as well. In other places, the Tanya vote was for me throughout my whole, you know, 34 days, whatever I was there. It was really the most difficult vote for me because by then we had become a family, as stupid as that sounds. And we've been through so much. It's not like we were, you know, a family of aristocrats whining and dining on red wine and cheese. We were, you know, in the trenches, you know, losing round after round, you know, with just a glimmer of hope. And then we get this victory and we're like, we can actually make it through this and survive. So that was a very, very difficult vote for me to write on Tanya's name. But essentially, for me, it came down to she's a little bit more, unpredictable than somebody like Dural is. And I think Sipay offered more in terms of, you know, connections to the amigos and what that could potentially, you know, be an avenue for me to get back in the game. Because also, you have to understand, I had nobody then, right? I mean, we voted out Felix. Other people didn't trust me. I lost Ting Ting. We're losing another person in Tanya. So I realized that if we swap or merge, I'm going to have two people by my side and that's it. I mean, that's a vulnerable place to be in Survivor. So yeah, for me at the end, weighing up the pros and cons, you know, everybody just brought more to the table than what Tanya did. And it was very rough vote for me to actually get out. And you can see it. I mean, if you go watch a tape, I mean, when we voted out in the tribal council, we wanted to vote Felix out, but we didn't want to vote out Daniel. It was just rough and bad for everybody.
Mm.
So let me hold your feet to the fire a bit. Let's say that you still stick in this three tribe configuration for one more vote. The Misfits lose again. You have to choose between keeping Durao or Sipe.
Oh my God, this is a horrible situation.
Yeah, I would have went to Sipe. Sipe and I had a very good relationship. We were very close on the island. When Rob said when they did the Sipe blindside, that what you call the mafia movie that's the hit on the mafia boss during that episode, when Rob said keep Jock out of this because he will actually play the idol for Sipe. I mean, for sure, everybody knew it. Maybe poor game plan my part for showing how close I was to her. But no, if we went to that one, Mike, I think popping out Rao would have been my plan, and then, you know, Sipe and I, we would have been like the last two people. We would have been a pair of misfits. It's like it sounds like a poker hand.
Yeah. So let's get to the second swap. So you're going to meet a lot of new people here. Rob, for example, Letitia, Mike, eventually Steffi. What were the dynamics in this new group?
We were two tribes of 14. So we were 15 people at the swap, two tribes of 7.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like you say, Steffi at the Island of Secrets. So for me, it became, you needed four, right? You needed to get four people on board. I knew I had to pay 100%. Kurbis had no one else. I mean, he was alone in the second part of the game as well. So Kurbis said, you know, Jockey, we need to work together here. And I said, yeah, sure, dude, for hell we do.
Did you ever tell Kurbis ever at any point that you had voted him during the game? Or like, when did he find that out?
I told him at Ponderosa. We were sitting having a lunch, and it was me, him, and Dante, and I tell him the whole plan. And Dante goes, what? What? And then he just goes on like a swearing ramble. He's like, yeah, but... and Kurbis was like, wow, and always went home.
Yeah, like, you guys work so closely together.
Exactly. I told him at Ponderosa, and we laugh about it now. He's like... He says I've been toying with his game since day one, and we were definitely in and out. It was a really fun conversation we had. At the Isle of Three, you need a majority of four. But one thing that became evident here, and once again the show didn't show it, and I'm gonna say too much. Read into this what you want, but on that. That thank you note I posted on Reddit. There's four people I leave out. I don't know if you picked it up. Most people only pick up three or two. I leave out Nicole, Rob, Letitia, and also Rocco. A lot of people don't miss that one. I don't have anything to say to him. Do with that what you want. But it became clear that Rocco, his head wasn't in the game. We were sitting at night crying, and then Letitia and Sipay would have to comfort him. He was stealing food, like blatantly, like we'd make 8 servings and he'd take like a spoon from everybody and we'd be like, yo, Rocco, dude, I mean, we're seeing you. You're right there, dude. I mean, we can see what you're doing. And he's like, yo, guys don't understand how hungry I am. And I'm like, dude, Rob is the same size as you are. He's hungry. I am half the size you are. So, I mean, either I should have that argument or Rob should have that argument as well. Which one of the two is it? It's like, yo, no, you guys understand, I'm so hungry. It's so bad being away from home. I miss my wife. And I'm like, dude, I'm also away from home. I'm also missing my wife. Everybody's away from home. You're not a special snowflake. But yeah, his head was really not in the game at all, which you would never guess from watching the season.
Yeah.
I mean, never in a million years.
That's
so
surprising, especially because we see him going to you and is like, hey, get rid of Rob. But it seemed like from what you're saying, it was more so just him sort of being like, yeah, I guess I have to do this, so I might as well try to like save my butt a little bit.
Exactly. And then we're all like, listen, and none of us wanted to work with a guy like that. I mean, you have a guy who's, you know, on the verge of you know, walking out of every single day.
And I feel bad for complaining about Mike not working with Rocco. So I guess I'll apologize to him tomorrow.
Yeah. Are you having a chat with Mike tomorrow?
Yeah.
Great. Actually, I didn't actually listen to Nicole's, just the slam of what's to come. I didn't want to.
It's fine. I can fill you in as to the one particular shop-centric part.
I don't want to contaminate my opinion of what I want to say. To feel like I have to justify what she said. I'm coming in clean. So Rocco, his head wasn't the game, and when he said, when we lost that challenge, everybody was like, okay, well, It's a no-brainer. We're just sending this guy home. It doesn't want to really be here. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So we get into the Spitshaker 7 of it all, and this is sort of like the third time when you've had a tribe that's like emboldened himself to be like, great, we're all working together here. What was sort of your sense as to whether or not, because Kubis, I guess your partner in crime here, is all about it, several votes into the merge. Were you as on board with it, or were you more so like, yeah, we'll see where this takes us?
We'll get to that Kubis part later. I'll speak to you about it as well. I was on board with it for a couple of reasons. One thing we said, and it's not shown, and this might be a pipe dream, but it's still something that galvanizes / puts fear into people. We all said, okay, we formed the Spitshaker 7. We stayed together the first vote, and we stand until we have 7. And if anybody breaks away from a 7 before the 7 left, we don't vote for that person at the end. And everybody's like, okay, that's a cool deal. So that's one of the things that wasn't really shown. But for me, I saw it as within that group, I was like right in the middle, right? In the sense of not the kingpin in the middle, but there were big people on the one side. There were massive strategic players on the other side. You had a weak person like Letitia on the other side. Like if one of these seven, if the seven has to start, you know, folding upon itself, I would probably be one of the last people remaining. So that's how I imagine in my head. So I'm like, this isn't a bad deal for me. I'm down. Let's do it. One thing I do want to say, maybe perhaps to your earlier question, Mike, about the dynamic at the Arlo, when we lost Rocco, we gained Steffi. And Steffi and I, we had an amazing time at that beach. It was this weird thing where every single morning before the sun came up, she and I would be awake at like, I don't know, like 5:30 or whatever, I don't know, the sun comes up. And we just walk down and go sit on the beach and we'd watch the sun come up and we'd speak about her husband and, you know, religion and her people and her Miss Namibia things and her whole life and my stuff. And she and I, we were really close. And even though we weren't like strategically close, emotionally we really connected, Steffi and I. So that's one person I had a good relationship with. And another one is also Mike. Mike and I mean, you can just imagine, like, if you watch from the outside and it's two people there, bit younger, bit more nerdy, into sports, but not into the image side of life. We really connected as well. The thing with Mike is, and him and I, we actually had a couple of plans where we'd said, listen, once we hit the merge, our objective should be to play up these big characters against one another. You know, let Dante and Rob run at one another. You know, let Kubis want to take out Steffi, and then him and I can just, you know, glide by up until the opportune time to strike. So that was the conversations I had with Mike. Within the Spitshaker 7, all my plans was essentially, it was a group, it was a plan, and maybe, so I don't want to preempt it, then we can chat about it later. But yeah, that's how I felt about the Spitshaker 7.
Who do you credit as the architect of that 7?
100% Kubis.
Yeah.
So the architect was the architect.
The architect.
I'm glad we gave him cheesy points for it then, because that's what we were showing to us. Yeah.
We'll speak about it later. I think Kubis was, you know, it's like, because it was his brainchild, when the child started being naughty, he was like, no, I'll forgive you because you're my child. You know, I'll take you back in. Instead of being like, I disown you, child. I'm going to get a new child. That should have been his plan. But no, Kubis was definitely the person who was instrumental in creating that, for sure.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. Yes, you get to the merge. And this is a really interesting dynamic. I mean, Nathan has just been voted out, another thing we'll talk about for several more weeks to come. Yeah. You have some Alter Alo people who, you know, last time you saw them, the Dantes and the Meros of the world, you were in a weird place with them, the whole Ting Ting thing had happened. But it's like they need you. They want to work with you. You've still got the Spitshaker 7. You're reconnecting with Doral. Like, you have a lot of avenues at this vote. So what was your perspective going into the merge?
Shannon, that's such a, like you say, there's so many people. I mean, 13 people, it's a massive merge. And obviously my first objective was to find out what happened on their side, to get the opinion on you know, what does Meryl and Dante think of these individuals? And it became very clear that Dante and Rob, I mean, the two of them, they don't want to have anything to do with one another. They are just, I don't know. They were, I don't know what it was. It was like two alpha males who was like, the egos were too big, or they had personal vendettas, but Rob and Dante, yo, they just wanted to like, they were like wanting to go with one another. Meryl was a lovely person. The thing with Meryl is, I think from our whole cast, she's probably the individual that was the most underrated from the what you see on the TV in terms of her threat level. I mean, Meryl was, she was a player. I mean, she had everybody wrapped around her pinky. She watched the show. She listened to podcasts. And it's actually, speaking of podcasts, it's actually the first time that I met Jeff. And Jeff, I knew Jeff, not personally, but I knew Jeff from, he was also one of the people who watched the podcast that I did. And he actually, at the first swap, he told people like, yeah, Jacques from the podcast. And then people came to me, Meryl was the one. She walked onto the beach. She's like, Jacques, you didn't tell me you had a podcast speaking about the show.
And so I'm, you didn't, like, tell, well, people Meryl, about that when you got to the beach?
No, I was like, I was upfront that I'm an engineer. I think it's silly to hide your occupation. I mean, but I'm going to tell them I'm a super fan. That whole super fan thing, I never pushed that narrative ever. It's one that was when Jeffrey said it, the players started being like, yo, Jacques knows the game. Jacques knows, he had a show about it. And then it's like the players started forming that narrative. I never, you know, planted it myself. But yeah, then I met Jeffrey, and it became clear to me that Jeffrey and Mike and Mabo were really close. And it became clear to me that Meryl and Dante was close. And I was at the time comfortable in the Spitcheck 7, but I didn't. People are like looking back saying, oh, you guys were so stupid. Why did you give Amigos free reign? But I never understood how close they were. I mean, I didn't have the bird's eye view like you guys were fortunate enough to have to see on the Island of Secrets how, you know, the two of them go together and found the idol. From my point of view, Tsipai says, listen, you can trust these guys. They're with me. You're with me. We're all, you know, all together. I'm like, well, I trust you. Let's do it. When we sent the two of them. I don't realize that Rob's like not in with Spitcheck 7 because he wants the Amigos, you know, to go to the end. I don't realize that Rob is angry for the Nathan vote. He wants to get revenge on Meryl and Dante because they didn't like Nathan. I didn't understand that at all. It was totally camouflaged to us how close a knit family they were. For me, it was, this is Spitcheck 7. We got the majority. And on the one side of the equation, you have Jeffrey, who is, I won't say a kingpin, but he's like the central cog of that Jeffrey, Mike, Mawa engine. And on the other side of the equation, you got a pair in Meryl and Dante. So if you knock out one of the two of them, you know, you fracture that a bit. So my objective was just as adamant as possible that we take out one on each side in subsequent tribal councils. That was something I was gunning for really hard. I think they actually mentioned it where I say, no, guys, we need to do Jeffrey now. We can't do Dante again. We can get rid of Dante later. We need to do Jeffrey now. I was beating that drum all day.
So one thing that I would love to find out is, you know, it's a little up in the air as to when people find out about the advantages you have. You know, obviously you told the Misfits, I believe this is the merge episode, is when you tell Rob you have the extra vote. But we'll find out in later episodes. People are like, oh yeah, Jacques will then, you know, use his idol. So when did you tell certain people about the certain advantages that you had?
I didn't speak about the idol again. I mentioned it at the Band of Misfits. Durao, from what I've heard, Durao went and loose-lipped it to everybody. He told Nicole and that whole tribe about the idol. And then apparently as well is Meryl said, because Durao told them about the idol, but she said that Felix motioned to them that I had an idol, but they couldn't hear what he was saying. He didn't want to say it out loud. So she said that Felix mentioned it across in that slight puzzle as well. But we didn't speak about it again. I brought up the extra vote to as many people as I can, because nobody's going to be like, yo, let's take out this guy because an extra vote at the extra vote for 13 people. Everybody was actually approaching me. Be like, like, you see Dante coming, okay, if we got this Dante with his brilliant math, he's like, okay, we've got four people, we've got extra mode, that makes eight. We're good to go. And similar within the Spitcheck 7, we knew we had the extra vote. So I didn't tell anybody else from my recollection about the advantages, the extra vote and the idol, at least up until then.
Yeah, what were you giving to Dante to make him think so much that he could trust you here? Because as I said, it's a complicated relationship, but he really trusts that you're going to be using two votes for his cause, and that he thinks that that's something that you've done, and that his plan just didn't work because the math didn't work, but everyone voted how they should have voted. So, like, what was that relationship like at that point?
Look, something I want to say about Dante, it's weird. As far as I understand, you're not doing a deep dive of him, but maybe get his perspective. I don't want to speak on his behalf, but Dante and I had a weird relationship where we both played completely different games. You know, he was all about, you know, being physical and getting a tight-knit group of people and going to the end. I was all about, you know, grabbing advantages and putting up smoke and mirrors and making sure the target's not on me. And he actually saw me come back one night when I was looking for an idol at the Alo, and he saw me in the middle of the night and I come back and he was like, lekker idol gesoek, Jacques. He was like, you know, search you for an idol, Jacques. And I'm like, yeah, well, you got to do what you got to do. And he's like, yeah, for sure. And we all sat, you see at the merge, him and I sitting there drinking milkshakes and just, you know, going through the game. In a weird way, we had a lot of respect for one another. I respected him a lot as, you know, a big physical player, and he was giving everything and he was providing for a lot of people, catching fish. The people he wanted to hug with his fist later on. And I was playing my game, but we had a lot of respect for one another. And I think that respect we had at the time was enough for us to say, okay, let's work together. And for me, it was just, I was keeping the door open. I certainly was like, if this thing collapses, I can work with Dante. Maybe if he wins a couple of immunities and he's left in the game with his loose change alliance, I can work with the guy. So that was my objective when I, you know, used the two votes on the target that he wanted to vote out, which was Jeffrey, keeping up my cover with him and afterwards almost pleading innocence, like, or ignorance, like, yeah, I voted for who I wanted to vote. I don't know who flipped. I thought we had it all locked in to keep Dante by my side. That was the plan, yeah.
So speaking of those votes against Jeff, because, you know, as you had said, he knew of you coming into this, and we're about to get into his boot episode, you know, you come back and you sort of have to explain to him, like, yeah, sorry, I put two votes on you. He tells you that it's water under the bridge, but this is where we get one of those various, I'm going to throw Jacques around analogies.
As far as I could throw him, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, did you get a sense from the moment that he was being sincere or insincere with him saying, no, don't worry about it, it's okay that you did it?
No, I think it was very funny when we came back from that tribal council. I actually showed in this a clip of it. He's like, hey, Jacques, who did you vote for? And I'm like, Jeffrey, dude, I voted for you twice. And then everybody just erupted in laughter. I've maintained this. I told this to Maba as well. My biggest flaw in my game, and I think it's silly to go back and say, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda, what would have happened. But my flaw in the game was, even though I knew Jeff, not knew him personally, but knew who he was, I don't think I had two conversations with Jeff on the merge beach. Because for me, I knew he was going to go home soon. Very similar to Maba. Now, we don't know how it's going to plan out, but I took people like Maba and Dorau and Jeffrey, and I realized, okay, they were on the top of the hit list, as Dorau called it. And they were going to get knocked. It is sent home soon. So why spend this time building a relationship with these people when I can just keep forming the trust within the alliance of seven we have, plus Nicole, who was added later. I think Jeffrey, maybe it was a bit of a facade from his side, but I must, you know, share some of the responsibility as well, where I didn't really get time to know him as well. I mean, I only got to know Jeffrey really at Ponderosa the week we spent there together.
I have some questions about the fake vote at the merge. So we saw, like, you giving a confessional about it, but Rob talking about it in conversation. So whose plan was this originally? And also, who knew about it? Because I think at the time we were confused. Like, did Mike know that you were throwing fake votes, or did he think you'd actually flip? Like, who was in on it?
It's interesting you mentioned Mike. He's going to tell you this as well, 100%, I guarantee you. But there was this moment before we went to vote where Mike came to me and he's like, Jacques, I'm begging you. We did Meryl. Everybody went along with plan. Please let's not do Jeff. He's like, I have Jeff 100%. You have Dorau. Let's vote out one of the people within our lines. Let's take out Rob or Steffi or anybody. Let's save Jeffrey. Let's go keep, you know, let's keep to our plan of getting these big guys to fight out one another. And then we started, you know, comparing, and I said, well, if we do that, we can get potentially Dante in. And we spoke about it, and he was punting it hard. And at the end, as we were speaking it through, from my point of view at that point in time, the pros for the Jeffrey vote outweighed the cons. Because if we do that, then once again, I'm in a new alliance with Jeffrey, who's a person that I'm once again, you know, don't have a relationship with. So for me, it was a matter of, I'd rather go with a devil I know than the devil I don't. And then Mike, obviously, he came to me like before the vote. It's like, last chance, did Jock, are we doing this? And I said, no. It's like, okay, well, then he'll stick to the plan. Just a side piece of information about the relationship Mike and I had regarding the Jeffrey vote. But yeah, I think around about then, yeah, I think it was up in the air that it was going to be Jeffrey. I don't think anybody was surprised with the extra vote. Oh, the extra vote I threw on Jeffrey, but we're sending out Meryl. Yeah, I think but it was right about that time. I think everybody knew of the extra vote. And I can't necessarily say whose plan it was. All I had in my mind was, we do one original Ta'alo and one original Laomai, then I'm happy. And that was all I was going for. Before we go on, can I share a fun fact of what happened the night of, I think it was on the merge night or the night after.
Yes.
Oh yeah, please.
It was just before we did the endurance challenge. We were standing with hands held high. We were sitting there and we were like making food at night, and it was like 13 people. It's quite a boisterous crowd. A lot of extroverts, people chatting all night. And I sit there and I have this pain in my stomach, right? Now, having cramps and diarrhea on the show of Survivor, that's like par for the course. You know, that's like a dime a dozen. And then I get this insane pain in my stomach. And I try to walk and I literally collapse. Like, I cannot walk. I literally cannot move my core muscles. And I'm lying on the ground. I mean, Sipais comes like, oh, Jockey, don't worry. Just take a poop. It'll get out. I'm like, no, Sipai, you don't understand. This is not a poop pain. This is like legitimately, I cannot walk. And then I try to walk again and I just collapse. And the cameraman at the time, he comes, he's like, you know, Jacques, what's going on? I'm like, man, I got this insane pain. I cannot move. And I mean, like, I play a lot of rugby. I'm a physical guy. I mean, I can take a beating, right? That's fine for me. It's not like I'm a wimp that gives up, but I literally can't walk. And I'm lying there and Meryl comes to me and she's by my side. And she's like, don't worry, Jacques. And so they phone the doctor. She comes in. They take my heart rate, everything. And while all this is happening, Letitia comes. And Letitia feels, and she's like, huh, Jacques, he's burst his appendix. They're going to take Jerk home. He doesn't have an appendix anymore. And I'm like, Letitia, no. Go away.
Yeah, this isn't the way it works. We tell you you're dying soon. You can't give that back to us.
Exactly. Yeah, you're the one that's, you know, got limited time with your family. I'm like, and Letitia's like, yeah, Jacques' appendix has burst. He's dying. He's going home. I'm like, no, it's not true. Letitia, go away. And I'm sitting there and the doctor comes and, you know, they like carry me there to the side and then she like goes through everything. And then essentially what happened is like, you know, when you have when you exercise and you have like a cramp in your calf or, you know, just from running, because we ate so little, I had like cramps in my core muscles, like six pack muscles. They were cramping, but like to a point where like it immobilizes me and I cannot move. And I'm like, okay, well, what now, doctor? And she's like, listen, the best thing you can do, drink some salt water and some normal water. You're going to get up a couple of times to pee. That's all you can do. Drink salt water, get that salt back in your body. That's the only thing I can tell you. I can't give you anything. I'm like, well, that doesn't help me. But yeah, eventually I thought I was like almost going to be pulled from the game. Luckily, I did not burst my appendix. And throughout this time, Meryl was the only one who was like there by my side, you know. And even though I was dying and I couldn't, you know, save myself, I felt so bad when I was writing, when I knew she was going home, and I was like, Meryl, listen, I know you, you know me, we're fine. And she's like, thanks, Jockey. And yeah, we just led her like a lamb to slaughter. She didn't expect it to be her at all. It's quite rough.
So I guess, you know, you survive perhaps a false appendicitis diagnosis. I want to talk about the reward steal for a second, because, you know, this is when you get sent to iOS, you find the reward steal, and you are going to vocalize this to us for several episodes about how, you know, you want to get to the loved ones, visit You want to use this to see your wife. You even tell us at a certain point that all you want to do is get to the loved one's visit. So how true was that?
Okay, so maybe we can get to that later on in terms of where it shifted for me. So sure, you want to make a loved one visit, but at the time, I got it and I was like, yes, you know, this is great. But I didn't tell anybody about that. I kept it to myself because obviously as soon as people like, listen, okay, you have a reward steal or you have any kind of advantage, they're going to target you, right? So I kept that one to myself. I think what I would have done is let's say it's, and we'll speak to that later, but let's say for instance, Steffi wins. I would say, okay, I'm going to take it. And then it's like, yeah, okay. Who do you want to take with? And I like, yo, Steffi, obviously you won. You can come and then you can choose whoever is left. I don't know if it's going to be at 10 or at 8 or at 4. I don't know when the loved one does it is. But if you choose the person who wins, nobody else can really be upset. I know a lot of people say, you know, oh, that's the worst thing you can do. Steal a loved one visit because you tinker at people's heartstrings and all that kind of stuff. But for me, and I think this goes back to what I said earlier, Mike, about why I went on Survivor. I didn't go to win $1 million. I didn't go to get a total of Survivor. I wanted to play the game, right? And Haley and I, we love Survivor. We watch it together. She's just as big a fan as I am. And for me, it would have been cool, you know, seeing the two of us there together. It's like something we speak about a lot or spoke about a lot. And so for me, it was not like it was. It was just a matter of, it's something that I am passionate about, and that's obviously her. And we would, you know, have that moment. But I wouldn't at the time do it to the detriment of another individual. I would say whoever wins, you know, you can also come along and you can choose the remaining squad, how many people we get to take. So that was my plan. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's the dumbest thing you could have done. But for me, like I said, I didn't care about stuff like burning a jury vote. I'm like, I'm here for the experience, right? I'm here to play Survivor, to find advantages, to find idols, to meet all these people. If I get to have an amazing day with my wife, then that's a big plus for me. And I would have been happy with that for sure.
So we talked about the Jeff vote and how kind of that was part of your long-term plan. We're going to get now to this major, major episode, a very unfortunate episode, I think, for you and Felipe. But you know, at first you do win immunity and reward in this group immunity challenge, and this was a very differently structured episode. And kind of while you're away, and you know, kind of behind your back, the seeds are being planted to take out who I think we can call surely your number one ally at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
So you know, talk us through what you were kind of aware of throughout this, because you got CPA talking to you and Rob about how you want to be a final three. I mean, you know, you said you would have cut her at a point, surely Rob at a point. So where are you working within all of these dynamics?
So if we went final three with Super and Rob, I think that would have been an insane ending. I think it would have been three very, very, very...
There's a reason that doesn't happen. Dynamic. Like, that's never going to happen. Yes.
Very dynamic, but very differentiated gameplays, if I can call it that way, in terms of making to the end. I mean, suppose everybody's mom and the loving one, Rob's, you know, this challenge beast, me, maybe put me into the strategic bucket, whatever you want to call that. So I would have gone through with that if that was the plan, or maybe cut Sipay out. Obviously, you don't know. But a long-term strategy with Sipay and Rob was definitely my plan. I'm like, well, this is cool. And this is why I had Sipay, because, I mean, if she had Rob, then we're doing this. This whole thing panned out while they were starting the coup to take over Sipay when I was on the Island of Secrets. And I must say, they hit it well for me. And I remember when we got back, Dante and Mike, I think we only went for on Tribal the next day. And it's a classic thing. Like, you listen to so many podcasts and people say this every single time. But they say the moment you stop playing is the moment you lose the game. And that is exactly what happened. I was exhausted. Like, I was physically exhausted from the game by that point in time. There were so many people, the merge, there were so many things happening. Myself, obviously, everybody goes through a lot, but I've been to every single tribal council bar too. And I was just so exhausted that I needed time to regather my thoughts. So that day, I'm like, guys, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to make food. And that's what I'm going to do. I mean, I know we were voting. It's never going to be Mabo or Dara or whatever. Just give me a name. I'm going to make food. And Dante was in a similar headspace where he was also like, you know, he's spent his day alone catching fish and just chilling there on his own. I think when he got wind of a plan really late. But yeah, you see people going off in directions, but I was, you know, up until then, our plan was foolproof. You know, we did do the middle vote, that worked out. We did do the Egyptian vote, that worked out. Why wouldn't this one work out? I'm in the majority. We have a target. But like I said, it's that classic mistake. And it's difficult to explain because you sit on the outside, look in and be like, yeah, just, you know, keep your nose everywhere. But I mean, you can't keep tabs on 11 people. It's impossible. And you only have so much energy in a day to give, right? So I was just at a point where I'm like, I need to just take this day and relax and get my sanity back. So yeah, I spent the whole day making food, keeping the fire going. And yeah, that night, it was supposed to be Maba. But then it was a CPA vote.
Completely miscellaneous to all this. This is when I feel like we really start to emphasize your analogy game. This is when we get the lion zebra stuff and the kudu giraffe stuff. I mean, I guess you're sort of speaking on, I believe actually you actually, to what you just mentioned, you actually say in the episode that you're sort of on cruise control at that moment. But was this something that was happening the entire time or just for some strange, odd reason? You know, maybe your trip to Jurassic Park made you start to think about wildlife in general, which leads to just this string of analogies.
I think it's a, you're speaking about miscellaneous. I'm going to take you another step back and more miscellaneous jokes, dismal stuff. Have both of you watched Prison Break?
No.
Series Prison Break.
I don't watch anything except Survivor.
I've watched a little bit. I've watched a little bit of it, but I'm no Josh Wegler when it comes to my knowledge of Prison Break.
Okay. There's this character called T-Bag. It's this bad villainy guy, and he's got this snake tongue almost. But whenever he speaks, he almost like he speaks in metaphors and analogies all the time. Like it's just so witty that it's all he speak. It's the only way he's speaking. And I watch it as a kid, and I'm like, wow, that's cool. I want to speak like that when I grow up. And then whenever I'd like, as stupid as it sounds, whenever I'd like hear a metaphor or somebody saying something cool, I'd like mentally jot it down because it's cool to speak, not just in a normal way. And it's actually, so I'm going down a side path now, something we spoke about with production during the audition process. And I'm like, listen, 10 people are going to say, oh, the challenge was hard. The challenge was difficult. You know, it was such a, or Tanya, so irritating. But if you come with a line like, you know, the only chance we have of winning this challenge, if it's making up a story nobody will believe, that's the line that's going to make the edit. And you have to speak like that in Survivor to make good TV. So it's just a fun fact about myself. So no, I was dropping metaphors and parables and comparisons all the time. I just think I don't know what it was about that tribal council where it all came out. Yeah, it was quite a cool thing. It was quite cool. And then the jury was laughing and Nico was laughing. I'm like, guys, it's not really that funny. And I'm like looking back, I'm like, yeah, they're laughing because I don't know what's going on. But it is what it is.
I'm so interested in where Dural was in all this, because like the way you speak about the Spitshaker 7 being your plan and Nicole, like where's Dural in that? Because he has a confessional here. He's obviously turned on CPE. You guys were the misfits. He talks about it kind of being a joke. And also, we do see that Kubas votes for Dural in a possible split vote plan that you might have been in on. So where is the disconnect here between you and Dural?
So, yeah, Dural, as far as I understood the plan or what's related to me, we're doing a majority of votes in Maba, one or two in Dural in case Maba has an idol. Now, this is another problem or a point in my game where I would go back and say, yeah, it was a fault of mine. I was so sure that I had Dural and that he had nobody else, that he would, you know, stay loyal to me and Sipe for what we've been through. I thought it was going to be like that kid who said, you know what, we went through kindergarten and middle school and, you know, all our families were poor and we grew up so down to earth and we've got this connection nobody can understand. But when we get to high school, we'd still have that relationship. I did not envision Dural to be an individual where we'd go through all of that, but when we get to high school, you know, there's going to be girls, and when a guy comes around with a quad bike, he's going to jump on the guy with a quad bike and be like, see you later, losers.
Rob's the guy
with the quad bike. Exactly. I didn't know he was going to be like, you know, foregoing our whole childhood for a guy with a quad bike because
did he also
you know,
win
that
a quad bike? I'm sure he also won a quad bike.
Only for a month.
Only for like 2 weeks though.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that was a mistake on my part when I envisioned the route to be loyal because of what we've been through and not continuously nurture and keep that relationship going. Yeah, we still went crab hunting and we still spoke a bit, but I didn't speak a lot of strategy with him because I was like, well, we got the 7. The Rao's for next. It's going to be Mabo, then the Rao. So it's on the not really. Don't have to just keep this guy complacent. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you know, Rob was like, you know, there's an individual who's a free vote if you can get him on your side. It's not that I didn't have a relationship with Rao. I just wasn't strategic, if I can verbalize it like that, where I think Rob got a strategic relationship going with Rao that, you know, bore fruit for him in the end.
Let's talk about Mr. Quadbike here, because after the CPay blindside, you know, Rob tries to pull Kubus and you inside and he's like, listen, guys, I wanted to include you in this, but there just wasn't any time, which is a little BS considering that he told Nicole, who was on iOS with Kubus. Yeah. So, I mean, did you sort of sniff that out at the time? And you also said at the moment, you know, I you should have told me I would have gone along with that. Is that true as well?
Look, at the time, a lot of things were going through my mind. You must also remember, I got three, as I said in the game, 3 shots to the chest, luckily non-fatal. There were 3 votes coming my way at Tribal Council as well. It was the first time that Steffi was, you know, being antagonistic towards me, you know, starting to tell me that I should play my idol, all this kind of stuff. And then I turned to Kubus and he said, no, we're good, don't stick to the plan. And yeah, so we get back and obviously Kubus and I are upset. And I verbalized to Rob, I said I would have gone through a plan, but 100% I wouldn't have. I mean, if I knew it was CPay, I would for sure have, you know, given him an idol and be like, oh, just stand up and say, yeah, I'm playing this for CPay. And this is where I'm like, Dante knew about this, right? Why did Dante not just come and be like, yo, Jacques, listen, your person,
that is
CPay is going home. Let's just let you, me, Kubus, and whoever, let the 3 of us just vote out anybody else and we save CPay, we can change this game. But he knew about it, went on his own tangent voting. I don't know, I think about Rob that night. If Dante would have told me, just listen, they're doing CPay, this is a plan, I would have been on high alert, I would have picked up what's happening, I would have played it for CPay, but then we needed more votes and, you know, we needed 4. So it's me, Kubus, Dante, and I don't know who our 4th would have been. Obviously, we're splitting votes on me. Might have been a risky play.
You, Kubus, Dante, and CPay.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, yeah,
yeah,
got 4. Yeah, yes, we got 4. Yeah, there's a 4th. Sorry. So that would, I would, for sure, Dante math. Yes, I'm doing that now. And there's also another conversation that I have with Kubus the next morning where him and I go down the beach. And I say, Kubus, listen, I think we should jump ship, right? These people, they clearly don't trust us. Not only did they blindside us, they were voting for me. They were coming for me. The 7 is done, dude. What we need to go sit with Dante. We need to tell Dante, write it in big sand letters, mold it and give him a massive, I am sorry, we were idiots. Will you have us back? And we need to go with Dante and make a plan because if we go down to the 7, we're going to lose. And I tell Kubus, I say, listen, dude, my social game is 0. I mean, speaking to you guys now, if you take the 21 cost of that we had and you rated their social games from, you know, 1 at the top until 21 at the bottom, I think I would have been in the bottom 3 in terms of my ability to communicate to people in terms of maybe Dante's a 1 below me. But I mean, it's a tight race. And not that I think I'm bad with people. I'm just not as good as somebody like Kubus or CPay or Meryl, who's a natural at, you know, charming people. So I tell Kubus, I said, listen, you got a better social read on these people. I say we jump ship, but if you say we stick with them, I'm down with you. But you and I, we're in this together, dude. So whatever you decide, we need to hash this through. And then Kubus says, no, Jockey, it was just a one-time thing. 7 is strong. He trusted Tisha. He trusts Nicole. They're tight. It's a fluke. Don't worry about this. You don't have anything to panic about. And oh, guys, I'm sorry. That wasn't the vote where they split votes. Sorry, it was a Dante one though. They voted three for me. Yeah, sorry, I've got my timeline.
Similar mentality, though.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, but nonetheless. So I tell Quibus, listen, we just need to.
Yeah, but if you had votes, so you could. Yeah, if Dante had come to you, you could have played the ad on CPay straight out.
Exactly. And So that plan still holds water. But yeah. So but then Quibus finally says, "Low, let's stick to the 7," and I'm like, "Okay, dude, I trust you. Let's do it." And we stick to the 7. And then we actually do one more vote together as a group, and we take out Dante next year.
Yeah, so Dante's going to go here. You're going to get some votes. You don't play the idol, which was risky. We thought really ballsy. Like, what went into the decision there not to play the idol after your number one ally had gone home a couple of days before?
The first time. First of many. At the time, I felt like Dante was... And this is the weird thing about Survivor, and this is what I keep telling people when they ask me, is Dante was factually correct. Every time he spoke, he was factually correct. When I watched it back, I'm like, I never realized how good of a finger on the pulse Dante had of the game. Like, he knew a lot of more what was going on, sometimes by intuition, sometimes by, you know, people telling him. But he's read on characters, and it's weird because... And not to get really personal, but he told us, like, you know, you can't trust individuals like Rob or Nicole because they do X, Y, and Z in their personal lives. You know, you, me, and Meryl and Kubis were cut from the same cloth. I don't know why we're working with people. This is like our people. We should be working together against people, quote unquote, like them. And I just always say, I'm like, yeah, Dante, whatever. But he was so bad at verbalizing it. And that's the difference. You know, he was factually correct, but it verbalized it in such an arrogant or aggressive manner where somebody like Nicole was whispering sweet nothings into people's ears, but with such conviction that people believed her. And in the end of a game of Survivor, it's literally a game of perceptions. It's not what's right or wrong. It's what you believe and what your viewpoint of it is. And even though Dante was right, nobody believed him. And even though Nicole was and Rob were lying, they all went along with it because, you know, they just said it better. And, yeah, so everybody was very, very anti-Dante. I was just so sure that people are going to go for Dante because of the sheer distaste that people had for him in the game.
So in terms of speaking of those perceptions, this is an episode where a lot of people are starting to say, Jacques is playing things up to the jury. That's one other reason why we need to get rid of him. Was that true at all from your perspective? Were you, I mean, we know that there were certain players, the top two finishers this season, for instance, who openly did not acknowledge the jury. Yeah. What was sort of your, I guess, relationship with them, especially during those last few rounds?
I would say it's, Mike, I wouldn't say I played to the jury, not at all. I think I was just, as stupid as it sounds, the Jacques I was on day one and the Jacques I am at home and the Jacques when I drink beer and the Jacques I was at tribal council, it's all the same Jacques, right? That's just me, right? And I think a lot of people started realizing during the game, but this is just who he is. He's a sincere guy who's a bit quirky, who's got casual one-liners, but he's got a bit of a crafty mind. He's always thinking plans through. And that's who he is. And I think the jury, when I said something, I was always trying to be sincere and to drive a narrative of a story forward. And not just give BS answers. Because, I mean, it's easy to say. I mean, it's like, you know, we see it always after a sport match when they're like, you know, the other team totally defeated you in tackles. You know, why do you think it's a problem for your team? And then the captain says, you know, we'll go back to the drawing board. A lot of credit to them. You know, the referee was good. It's like that generic answer, you know, the captain gives after each sport game. It's very similar where a lot of people at Tribal Council were just giving these generic answers. And I think I was just speaking honestly. And if I said, listen, this is the reason why we are voting out Dante because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. I was being sincere. And when I said, you know, this is why I think splitting votes at 9 is not a good idea, Nico, I was being sincere. And I think the jury saw that as this guy is just a genuine guy and all the other answers, it's like they came through a filter or they were disingenuous. And I think that's what frustrated them. And that's where they... I'm not saying they rooted for me at the end. Perhaps they did. But that's why I think the perception of a jury was in a favorable way towards an individual like myself, Mike, and Quibus, whereas they didn't like the badgered answer that Nicole gave most of the time.
you know, Dante's going to go here, and he's the one, as you said, who's like trying to rally the loose change players the whole time. Looking back at it, is there a realistic point where you could have had the numbers to flip? Because, you know, there's so many dynamics to it. Even at the merge, you know, if you're going to, we always said to Alu and Laomei getting together, but like, you know, Mike's obviously not in that. Dural's not in that. And you seem to think you have a good thing with the Split Shake 7 because at that point, you know, Sipe hasn't gone yet. And so it's really only after that that you might have been onto that. Do you think that there ever were the numbers there, or was everyone just way too locked into what Rob was doing?
Look, maybe if we didn't have the numbers, and we can speak about this later, I think a lot of the people in our season, sure, I don't want to throw shade on the individuals on a personal level, but I think it felt for me a lot of the people playing the game were playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And I think I would have then, let's say we do that. Let's say we get me, Kubus, and Dante, right? Let's say, I know Mike wouldn't have gone along because Mike didn't like working with Dante and Kubus. I don't know why he didn't like them. But let's hypothetically we get somebody like Mike or Maba. We get four, right? Mm-hmm. Then we go 4 versus 5. Then I would say, okay, guys, y'all got some idols on your side. We all got some idols on our side. If it's an open war, let's go. With one of the four of us, we're going to play it amongst ourselves. You can play the idols how many you have amongst the five of yourself. Let's roll the dice and see what happens. And if we lose, then we lose. But I would, if I knew how strong the Amiga mentality was, and I knew what the how they envisioned, you know, their place in the picking order versus somebody like myself and Corbus, I would have said, let's jump ship and go out swinging. And if we go out, we go out swinging. But if we can have a time to flip the game, let's do it now rather than just bleed out and, you know, get dragged through a game and being voted out that, you know, 4, 5, or 6 or whatever the number is. So I don't know. Maybe Corbus could have, he was quite a charming guy. Maybe he could have rallied Maba and or I could have had a better relationship with Maba. That's also something I regret, not getting to know her. But if I can be like, yo, Maba, listen, not just we're making a plan now because it makes logical sense, but because I think I'm trusting you and we got a personal connection, now's the time to jump ship. Let's get 5 people and flip the game on its head. Definitely, I would have done it.
So you and Kubus are on the outs, and I think this is the episode where Kubus finally realizes it, albeit a little too late because this is his boot episode. So the reward challenge is actually going back to one of your returning Survivor seasons, Survivor Co Wrong. This is the reward challenge, very similar to that, where you can pick between a food, a letter from home, and an advantage. And I think, yes, you know, if you're sometimes, you know, if you put yourself in the mind of someone who knows they're on the outs, you would think they would go for the advantage.
Yeah.
You instead go to the letter from home. What led you to sort of prefer one above the other?
Can I tell you what I don't understand about this episode, right? We were sitting making food, and everybody, I mean, okay, Mike, you've been there, but I don't know if you've been there like deep into the game. People start speaking about food a lot, constantly, nonstop. Like, it's this mantra that everybody's just speaking about food all the time. And everybody was like, if there's an auction or a challenge or a choice, we are all doing food. We don't care about anything else. Everybody was like, we're doing food. And that was like the whole opinion of everybody at camp. So when we got to the challenge, and you see this, I think there's 9 of us or 10. There's 10 people left. No, 9. You look around, and then I'm like, okay, and then Nico reveals, and you have to make your decision. But it's not that it is on the TV where we raise our hands. You go to the production people, and you tell them which one you're playing for, and then when it's a reveal, you set it up. You show your hand. Now I'm doing it in my head. I'm doing the math. I'm like, okay, everybody wants food, right? Everybody spoke about food. So that food advantage is going to be the big one, right? I purposely don't want to go for the advantage because just the round before, I had 3 votes against me, right? Now, I don't know where that's coming from or what people's perceptions are, but in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if people are scared that I've got an advantage, you know, doubling down on another advantage might not be the best player. So I want to lessen the strategic or advantage or uncertainty threat that I have in the game. I didn't realize at the point in time how deep in the red I was. Obviously, I would have been went all in. So I'm thinking, okay, everybody wants food. I don't know, maybe Nicole or Rob will go for an advantage. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, the people who will go for letters are going to be like Leticia and Maba and maybe Dural. So that's the easiest one to win without raising your threat level because everybody's doing food. So that's why, you know, choose a letter. And when the letters are being revealed, I'm like, wait, what? Like, everybody's doing letters? I'm like, what the hell, guys? Where's this? Why is nobody doing food? This is what you all were on about. Then it's like two people doing food and two people doing the advantage.
That's so interesting, because not to spoil again too much of my Nicole thing, but she went with food for the exact same logic that you did. So it basically was everyone trying to pick the category that would have the least amount of people. And I guess so many people just ended up choosing loved ones letters for that logic.
Exactly. I just thought
like a double buff.
Yeah, I just thought nobody was going to do that. Everybody was going to do food. And that's it. So obviously, like, people are like, oh, you should choose an advantage. I'm like, guys, I have an award steal. I have an extra idol. Guys, I have a fun story which nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Doral's
idol. Doral's idol, exclusive. Never heard it before. Doral's fake idol. Guys. You know Doral fans this one-time idol, right? Mm-hmm. Just before the merge. Right, okay. And this is when Doral and I, we were still besties. We were still locked in. Okay. So everybody's asking, they're like, why is Doral not using his idol? What's happening? I'm like, guys, I know, but obviously I can't say. Okay. So what happened is we got back, right? Or we merged, right? And Doral and I, we go to one side and he tells me about this idol. And I'm like, dude, this is epic. You know how much damage we can do with a fake idol that looks like a real one. I mean, it's a key. It's got the chair. It looks like a real idol for sure. And I'm like, dude, this is brilliant. So when I get sent to the Island of Secrets that night, I tell him, give it to me and I'll spend this night and I'll get it right. So, he hands me the fake idol. I have it. They actually chose me to go to the Island of Secrets. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying to think, I need to somehow wrap this back in its original state that, you know, it's believable. Okay. And I'm looking at the two idol notes I have. So there's both the Laome and the Ta'ala one. And both of them at the top left corner have the original tribe insignia. So Ta'ala's got the seahorse and the Laome one's got the turtle. Okay. And now I'm so frustrated because if you do this and somebody picks it up, they're going to be like, why is this a yellow letter? Why has it got the Laome symbol on it? Jock's planted this, right? Okay. So now I'm like, I have to be crafty. Okay. And I start scraping off the Ta'ala one because that's the one I had the longest. It was through a lot. It's starting to get blurry and stuff. So I start scraping off the insignia with the machete. Right. The minute it gets dark and I can't see anymore. So the next day I continue and I get back at camp and I'm like, Doral, this is my plan. Just give me like half a day. I'm going to go alone. I'm going to scrape this off. We're going to wrap it and then we put it somewhere. And he's like, okay, what's our plan? And I'm like, dude, I think we place it there where the firewood is, like underneath the firewood or somewhere there. So you want one of these guys to get it. You want like Rob or Dante to grab it and think they're safe. And he's like, yeah, that's a genius plan. And I go sit there on the side of the rocks and I'm shitty and I'm scraping the paint off. And I get back into camp and everybody's like, hey, Jacques, why don't you give us the fake idol? We want to see it.
Oh, my God.
Classic Doral.
And I'm like, what? And then I was like, you know, Jacques, man, they're like, why are you alone? And I'm told them, you know, Jacques got my idol. He's trying to make a fake idol with his idol. And I'm just, I just cracked. And I accidentally told him about my idol, man.
So now we know why everyone was talking about Doral's fake idol.
So now you know it because
everyone. Yeah, that makes
sense. Because it told everyone. So you remember, so when you get to Point Rose and we're like, okay, is that Jock's real idol or Doral's fake idol? It's because everybody knew about Doral's fake idol. So there's your inside scoop.
This makes me and so
it's
happy.
It's such a iconic thing of our season that you don't even laugh about it, but nobody's surprised when you tell the story. They're like, that makes totally sense because that is how the people played in our season. I missed the prime opportunity to con somebody. Shucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like if you give Doral like fake bills to go into like a negotiation where he's like, okay, you give me the jewels, I'll give you the fake money.
That's so true. All right, so let's get to one of the more confusing votes of the season, I would say. This is when Corbus goes home, you button up your shirt, which was a baller move. You're trying to get something eventually together against Steffi and kind of approach what would be or should be the loose change players. And it seems like you really will be the target all day, and then the votes are changed to Corbus. So I definitely had my conspiracy theories, a lot of confusion around this vote. How did this vote happen from how you understood it?
Okay, so obviously, by this time, you know, the writing's on the wall, and Kubis is like, listen, the seven, yeah, this thing's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially since they tell him, listen, no, they're splitting votes on me, and Kubis is like, why are they splitting votes on Jacques? That's the name of the plan. We're supposed to do Maba. And so I go to Maba, and I say, Maba, listen, this is the plan. I mean, these people, obviously, we were part of him, but they're coming for us. And I think now is as good a time as any to jump ship. I mean, if you go with them, they're just going to, you know, keep you until X and Y. Then we're going to, you know, cut your throat. Now is the time you need to jump ship and work with us. If we have you, me, Kubis, Doral, we have four people. If we can maybe get Letitia, Kubis is adamant he can get Letitia, that's five. We can go, you know, five versus four. Or even if we go four versus five or three versus five, if we use an idol and they split votes, we can actually take one of them out.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't want to go along with the plan. Or she says she wants to, but I can see she says it. And I'm like, okay, but who's the individual who knows Maba the best or has the best connection? It's probably Mike. So I go to Mike. I'm like, Mike. And this is where once again, and now obviously it's the scramble game, you know, people running around and you don't have a lot of time to plan because, you know, it's how the game plays out. So there's not a lot of calculation. It's almost like you're shooting from the hip. So I go to Mike and I'm like, yo, Mike, I got this advantage. I can still reward. Listen, let's use this. Let's get on board. Let's do it. And Mike's like, no, dude, I don't want to be on board. I'm like, and eventually says yes. And then I can see he's also hesitant. And then Steffi comes back from the beach. I think she took a shower, a swim or whatever. She comes back up and I'm like, hey, Steffi, what's up? And she's like, oh, Jacques, thanks for caring. And she's like super angry. And I realize the plan has been leaked. So now I'm like, okay, well, the plan is leaked, right? So they're not going to go through with it and they want the idol. So what I do is I say, okay, guys, obviously now I understand what's happening. And I'm back in that same mentality that I told you earlier where if they vote me out tonight, they vote me out. I mean, there's, what, nine people left in the game? So be it. But if I play my idol now and I save myself, then I'm going to vote me out the next round. So I with flamboyant and extravagance, pull up my idol and be like, okay, Steffi, this is the idol you want me to play. I'll play it tonight. And we're like, how do we know it's a real one? I'm like, well, here's a note. And they're like, how do we know it's not the idol note? And I'm like, well, here's the other note. I'm like, anybody else want to go through my bag? So I hang the idol up and I put down my notes and I'm be like, I'm leaving all my stuff here. And now, if you haven't played Survivor and you haven't been there, you don't realize it's a weird concept that your whole life can fit into a single bag. You cannot fathom that concept of everything you own fits into a bag. And obviously you have a lot of sentimental stuff, like let's say the idol notes or a couple of people make like bracelets with the fishing gear for, you know, loved ones back home. So people like you, I got some stuff from Island of Secrets that I stole that I'm bringing in my bag. So I got a lot of sentimental stuff I want to bring back home, but I'm like, I'm going to leave my bag here. And I'm very vocal about it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to run around anymore. I'm going to display my idol, make sure I'm here tomorrow. And then that's it. And I leave everything. And I'm very vocal about it. Right. So I walk out, leave everything, just the necklace around my neck. And then as I'm doing that, once I'm doing this, you know, extravagant thing, I see people like, I can see the question marks appearing about above it. Like, is it a bluff? Is it not a bluff? Is he really going to do it? Is he not going to do it? And then when I eventually walk out, I'm like, people are like, Jacques, are you really not taking your back? I'm like, guys, I'm really not taking my back. I'm going to get back here tonight. So I like make my space in the shelter ready, put a pillow in place. I'm like, I don't want to struggle in the dark. And people are like, okay, well. So I knew the plan was leaked. I knew it. People were not going to go through with it. I didn't know who they're going to go after, who they're going to split votes on. But I was just so, I needed to sell this thing so hard that they, whoever is splitting the votes on, that person goes home. I didn't know it's going to be Kubis. That's a shocker. But yeah, then we get there. Obviously, people speak about it. I say, yeah, Nico, I didn't even bring my bag. I only have I've got the Skevler vest. And Steffi starts like, people are starting to like, it sounds like they double guessing themselves and Rob's like, yeah, whatever happens, just stick to the plan. Everybody just write down the name you all discussed. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. I'm writing down who you all told me to write down. And we're like, yeah. And obviously we're writing down Steffi. And we went after Steffi, not because she was this massive strategic threat. It's just she was the only one in that alliance who didn't have an idol. We knew about Nicole's one with Nathan. Or we were 90% sure that she had the whole thing. We obviously knew about Rob's one. A lot of people that spoke about, you know, how they had it afterwards. So Steffi was just a target that didn't have an idol. It was simple as that. And then obviously there's a confusion on their side, and Steffi should also write down my name, but she writes down Quirbus because she panics. And if somebody else panicked as well, or if somebody else didn't, I wasn't involved in the vote, so I can't give you the
conspiracy theory. Yeah,
I can't give you the conspiracy. All I know is that I tried really hard to sell it, and then Steffi was afterwards like she panicked and she wrote down the incorrect name. Which still wouldn't have made a difference, even if Quirbus flipped and wrote down my name. I still think I would have been saved by one. But if somebody else, you know, wrote down Jacques and Steffi stuck to the plan, I would have been sent home.
Yeah, well, in hindsight, I do think that there's, you know, because at the time I was talking about, like, was this luck? Because I thought Steffi was, as you said, like, pretty annoyed and found out about the flip, and she changed her vote because of that. But I do think that she's scared of the flip coming back on her, but also she's scared of that because if she puts a majority of votes on you, there's a real chance that possibly she could go home. So, you know, exactly, you're the one who sold that. So you do play an important part in that, of course.
But you at the time, Shannon, let's not get you off the hook too quickly. At the time, you said, no, that was a luck. This move was bad. It would have been saved anyway. No credit to Jacques. No jersey points. He's just an average survivor player. And that's
I don't know if I said average. I definitely didn't say average survivor player. But no, I think at the time it was just like, because we didn't see so much of what you just said. No, you know, this was exactly like the vote where it's like, if we saw Steffi finding out about the plan, and then we saw you finding out that she found out about the plan, and then your part in playing with that information, the information that I was going on was that make the connection, to find out that you knew, that she knew about, you know, because the information I'm going on is you're thinking the plan's actually going to work, and that's why you don't play the idol, rather than intending for the split vote to go home, which was, you know, absolutely what happened.
At the time, Mike might have decided he's just going to go through a plan, and we might still have maybe got four votes on Steffi. I didn't know, but from what I knew, she at least knew of it, the way her body language and the way she spoke to me. Mm-hmm. So it was like out in the open.
Before we get into the incident, one more quick thing that I want to bring up, because like you said, I think you were certainly playing up the dramatics when you talk about leaving your bag behind, really building this up. But this is also, and maybe this is another reason why, you know, Shannon, you were a bit more down on Jacques' game in this episode, was this is also the tribal council where you dig into Letitia for having a quote unquote passive game. Maybe this is revenge for her almost trying to medevac you with appendicitis earlier on. But was that also part of the dramatics? What led you to, in that moment, deciding to really, you know, dig into Letitia? And I think Maba sort of got included in there as well, and they sort of struck back at you as well.
Okay, it's two separate things, and I'm going to answer them separately. But Letitia one is, you need to understand, every single tribal council, Letitia had these three lines she said. She said, Nico, I sit, and I watch, and I observe, and I learn. And that's the only thing. She's like, I watch, and I observe, and I learn. And I'm like, Letitia, at some point in time, you need to take the game into your own hands. And she says no, she's included in the decision-making process. But I've been there. I know what it's like. We go to Letitia and we say, Letitia, we have two options. We can vote out Maba or Meryl. Maba, she's not a good swimmer. She can't really win any challenges. She's got no allies. Meryl, she's super smart. She knows the game. She studies it. She listens to the podcast. She's found an idol one. She's a good social player. She's a big threat. Letitia, who do you think we should vote out? And then she sits back and she's like, experts on the glasses. Guys, I think the best person to vote out would be Meryl. She's a bigger threat. And we all say, oh, okay, well, thanks, Letitia. Now we know. And we're all voting Meryl. So I've danced that dance with Letitia. I know what they are telling her and how they are communicating with her and how they are giving her the information, where they give her two choices and she feels like she's included in the decision-making process, but it's a very skewed offer that they are putting down in front of her, if that makes sense. So I was getting frustrated with everybody just going along with the majority and not being able to realize, okay, I'm just the right, I'm going to, the next bus stop I need to get off. And they were like, no, I'm going to the end. And I'm trying to hammer home that, guys, there's only three people who can sit at the end. You're going through this plan, and there's always another target. It's me, it's Dante, it's Sipai, whoever it is. You need to start playing and making decisions for yourself. Because if you're just, you know, being strung along and you think you're making the decisions, your throat is going to get slit way before the end. So, once again, Mike, what you say, it's maybe not the how I said it. I believe I was correct, but maybe not the way I communicated it to Leticia was the best manner. But like I said, it's because I've been there and I know what they're telling her. The Mabo one, yeah, what the wrong person to go into with an investment argument, the investment analyst, where I told her I'm not investing in cryptocurrency, I'm doing slow yield bonds. I was like, and that's actually something where people are like, yeah, Jacques only playing for the family visit. But that time it was 100% part of my bluff, where I'm like, guys, I don't care about anything else. I just want to make a loved one visit. I think it's tomorrow. I'm playing my idol. I'm not doing anything risky. I'm not doing anything crazy. I just want to be here tomorrow for a loved one visit. Once again, part of selling my bluff that I'm not going to play the idol to get all these people 100% believe into that I'm going to play it, and then maybe, you know, get them to vote for a different target. So that's why I lashed out at Maba. I'm playing a low yield investment, and that's why I told Tisha, you know, she needs to start playing her own brand, because that's the two narratives.
Yeah, well, okay. So we're going to have to get into what happens after this tribal council. You've lost Kubus, who at this point I have to assume is your one and only ally. You buttoned up your shirt, didn't play the idol. You know, we've now understood all the reasoning behind that. And you get back to camp for, you know, I think we've said something that unfortunately is going to be really looked back at, you know, when we think about the season. The incident. We just need to hear, I guess, every part of it from your perspective on this night and kind of beyond.
Yeah, so look, obviously I'm super jacked. I'm super high. I'm like, wow, did I just pull this move off? I'm super jocked. Yeah, mm-hmm. Jocked up, you know, on on chakroids. Yeah. So I am so pumped with this move. And I'm like, and maybe that's maybe the bit of a super fan in me, where up until then I've just played the game, but I'm like, as stupid as I sound, I'm sitting there, I'm like, how cool is this going to look on TV?
You're like, I'm going to get all the chibi points, and then I didn't give you the chibi points, and it was literally the cause of this whole thing.
That was why I did it. I wanted the chibi points. I'm just like, you know, Shannon's going to give me, I'm going to be 3 for 3. I'm going to be top of the leaderboard. So I was like, as a fan, I'm like, wow, I don't think anybody's ever pulled this off. I know, like, the Amigos went in with it to, you know, cause some paranoia. I know Russell tried it, but he couldn't pull it off. So I'm like, wow, this actually worked. I'm just so astonished that they all fell for it. So I'm super high and I'm super jacked up. And then we get there, and you see, you know, Rob's congratulating me. People are like, wow, that's insane. But at the same time, just as people are congratulating me and patting me on the back, you can feel there's this frustration. Like Steffi goes on her own, and people are like, what happened? I think Mike's like, guys, what happened with the vote? Because if you go back and you watch it, when I don't play it, like, Mike starts laughing behind my back. And Nicole is like, oh no, this just happened. And this guy's going to be voted out with an idol around his neck. And everybody's just laughing when the votes are read. And then they realized, oh no, something happened. So their opinion of what should have happened didn't play out. So initially, Mike is like, guys, what happened? Who flipped their votes? And then Steph is like, she has to come clean. She didn't stick to the plan. And then everybody's like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. And then, you know, everybody's looking at me like, okay, well, you know, and now Steffi, she starts verbalizing it. And she's like, you know, Jacques, I just need to tell you that's a bold move. But from now on, it's a street fight. The gloves are coming off. There's going to be no rounds. We're going to get, you know, down and dirty. And essentially, everybody's like standing next to her nodding along. So you can say what you want, but it felt to me like, okay, now I'm standing here and six people are bullying me into a wall because I'm playing Survivor. I don't want to give up and roll over and die. Okay. And if you take anybody and you start, you know, backing them into a wall with six people against one, at some point in time, they're going to be like, yo, get, you know, out of my space. You know, this isn't cool. So I say, okay, well, I still have an idol. Who's going home the next vote? And they're like, no, we're going to vote for you. I say, really? Are you all going to vote for me? We're going to split votes. And we're like, no, we're all going to vote for you. Mm-hmm. I say, okay, I don't believe that, right? But if you do, and you're all voting for me, which I don't believe, if you're everybody voting for me, I'm just going to play, I'm going to play the idol myself, and I'm going to go after the biggest mofo of, in the season. Okay? So, what I wanted to verbalize once again, maybe it's not the right way.
This one was fine.
Yeah. If you're just writing down my, if somebody's telling you write down my name, they're coming for you. So we all should sit around and discuss who's telling you to vote for who. Because if you are, everybody's going to vote for me, and I don't believe that for a second. But if you're going to do, I say let's start taking out these big players, because I was getting frustrated of people like Letitia just, you know, going along, not wanting to make a move. Mike going along, not wanting to make a move. Darrell not just going along, not wanting to make a move. And everybody felt like they were calling the shots, but obviously they weren't. And I actually looked at Rob when I said it. So Rob knew I was speaking to him, and he was like right in front of me. Rob's a big guy, and he had a coconut in his hand, and he like threw a coconut into a tree, and it like smashed into a thousand pieces. And I'm like, whoa, these guys are really angry. And then, yeah, just everybody just started erupting, and people started shouting. And then they're like, you don't call me that. I'm like, okay, guys, I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. I don't mean to personally insult anybody. And then it just went on and on. And we're like, yo, and yeah, you saw what happened. So I said, you know what? And they're like, yo, nobody wants to sleep. I'm like, yeah, I'll sleep in the hammock. And they're like, yo, go away. We don't want to sleep next to them. I'm like, that's fine. So I sleep in the hammock, and then what saddens me, not the correct word, but what got to me is people started getting really personal. Like they'd speak as if not in the room. Nicole would say, yeah, Jacques' wife, imagine how embarrassed, he speaks about his wife all the time. Imagine how embarrassed his family's going to be when they see how disrespectful he is to women on national TV. And
oh, no.
People are like,
but you're a woman in
like,
power, yeah, Jacques.
Yeah, and then people are like, Jacques, imagine how his family's going to be when he's portrayed like this. And imagine being the villain of the season and you think you are the hero, how bad that must feel. And imagine how his family's feeling at home watching this. And they're just going on. And I'm like, in their midst, I'm like, and then like Letitia starts with this thing that there was this one incident when we merged the first time together when I like, out of frustration in that one challenge, I just swore. And she's like, I swore at her. And I'm like, I not swore at you. I just swore. I mean, You watch the confessionals, even people are swearing all the time. People just, you know, the animators, and they just talk, you know. And she's like, yeah, he called me this and this and this and they were at. And I'm like, Letitia, I don't like, no, Jacques, you're not allowed to defend yourself. Go back to your hammock. And I'm like, okay. So I sit there and it just goes on for about a day. Then the decision comes, we have to send someone to the Under Secrets. Obviously, I'm not even involved. I just sit there. They choose Steffi and Mawa. Yeah, and they just go on. And then, like I say, really personal. And me, being me, it's difficult for me to say the words, because I don't think there's words to describe this. But I was then at an extremely dark place in my life. Like nothing else mattered to me. I'm like, if I walk into the sea now, tonight when there's no camera watching and I drown, I wouldn't care. I'm like, that's the kind of headspace I was in. And up until then, I mean, I've had ups and downs and downs and highs, and I'd always been able to almost want to say pull myself out of that pit. But this is the first time when I was looking up in this pit of despair, and I'm like, I don't really know how to get out of this. And obviously nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody's allowed to talk to me, which whatever you want to, that's. And once this happens, when people are not allowed to talk to you, you must actually go in the Google Maps and zoom into Samoa and just see how in the middle of nowhere it is. And you realize that when you fly and you're like, I am in the middle of nowhere, right? And Survivor's already a complex game in terms of morality and what's right and what's wrong, but there's always people around you, and to be alone for 2 days, nobody wants to talk to you. You're being, you know, shunned aside. It's extremely lonely. It's very difficult to verbalize for somebody who wasn't there how lonely and how dark that space was. So I said, okay, well, walking into the sea is not an option because you got a family back home. You know, you need to board the plane in 12 days or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to just keep my mind busy, because if I lose my mind, I'm going to lose my sanity. So I just sit there and start chopping firewood into pieces, right? And I just stop chopping firewood and I start getting the fire going and I'm like, okay, this is how much rice I'm making. I start making rice. And then I don't know who it is, if it's Rob or Dara or Mike. I think, yeah, Rob is the first one. He comes like, he's like, yeah, okay, you just need to say this whole thing happened. It was bad. He doesn't want, you know, me to, nobody to speak to me. And I'm still, you know, I'm a lacquer guy. I've always contributed at camp. He wants me to continue doing that or whatever. I'm like, yeah, sure. So he's like, well, he's fine. If we don't speak alone, if we don't speak strategy, he doesn't have an issue with me being in camp. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks, Rob. That means a lot. So then I just start making fire again. And then one by one, you know, the people come and be like, yo, sorry, we overreacted, whatever happened. The very last person to say sorry was Nicole after the Maba vote, where we'll get to that now. And during Maba vote, whenever she opened her mouth, like the jury was started laughing at her. And it was, I think Nico at a point in time was like, guys, please be animated, but just, you know, down and down, dial it down two notches. And when she came back, she's like, Jacques, for the first time, I understand how it's like to laugh whenever you are speaking. So I just want to say, I'm sorry. And I'm like, okay, sure, that's fine. So, yeah, that's how it played out. I don't know. I haven't really spoken to this about a lot of people that was involved. Steffi phoned me and she said she's real sorry. That wasn't cool. I didn't know what Nicole said about it. She might have, I don't know, said other stuff. But from my perspective, that's how it played out, and that's essentially what happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, first I want to say, you know, as someone who admittedly sort of has struggled with mental health and has admittedly had some of those thoughts sometimes, I cannot imagine having to weigh with that in an extremely deprivated environment like Survivor. When you watched it back on TV and then also received, you know, such a large online reaction to it as well. I mean, how tough was it, A, to re-experience it, yet on the other side to have what I would see was a swarm of sympathy around you in your situation?
Yo, this is the interesting thing. When it happened, so I preemptively braced my parents. We were in Zanin. You guys will never know where Zanin is, but it's a town I'm from, small town. We were there and I told them, I said, listen, the next episode's going to be rough. And I just gave him like a bit of a load. And I said, this is what I said. This is what's going to happen. It's going to be tough. Brace yourself. And then we were watching it at home with, like, you know, my wife and my friends and I think my sisters were here. And everybody just started crying. And then like my immediate family, they were like, and even not like that, like I would get messages from like friends of mine at like, that Sunday at like 2 a.m. saying, Jacques, I still can't sleep. I'm thinking what you're going through. And I just want to tell them, guys, it happened 12 months or 6 months ago. I promise you, I'm here in flesh and bone. I'm fine. And they're like, no, man, what happened to you wasn't right. And so it struck me the second time when I saw how it affected not only my family, but my friends as well. You know, my work colleagues, everybody was like, people were like, we drink coffee and they start crying and they're like, how can you go through that and be okay? You know what I mean? Don't you want to go and speak to the psychiatrist? And I'm like, guys, I'm fine. I promise you. And they're like, because obviously like we have the ability to go and speak to the inmate psychiatrist. I've declined that. I said, I'm fine. And I mean, I've dealt with that in the island. Well, no, we're not allowed supposed to have contact. Some of the players even like sent me messages and be like, Jacques, you told us it was bad, but you didn't tell us it was that bad. Why didn't you tell us how bad it was, you know, the jury members? Mm-hmm. Once again, I said, guys, I mean, like, it's so long ago. So for me, watching it back, yeah, it was rough. But and obviously there's a lot of not everything is shown, and it goes on a lot longer, and which is shown. People do apologize. That's also not shown. So it might argue it cuts both ways. But for me, what was the worst is seeing how it emotionally impacted my immediate circle of individuals around me and the effect it's having on them. And I'm like, it's a double whammy because I'm okay, but they're not okay. And I have to be there for them again throughout all of this. I'm like, it's fine. So that was probably the toughest part of watching it back, seeing how it affected my family and my friends.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that this happened. It made me angry. It still makes me really sad. And, you know, I don't want you to have to throw anyone under the bus because this is a very real, very personal thing. This isn't the game. But, you know, when we're watching it, we're seeing edited bits. We don't see, like, Rob throw a coconut or what people are saying. We see what they choose to show us. So I guess from your perspective, it was very much a group dynamic against you. Were there individuals that you kind of blame the most, or is it very much it was just like it was a group against you?
Initially, it certainly when Steffi spoke and everybody looked at me in the eyes and she was like, it's a street fight. It felt like a group ganging up on me, right? That's why I went into defensive mode. Because I don't have that roll over and die kind of mentality. I'm like, you want to go into the octagon? Well, let's put our gloves on and go. I'm ready. I'm not afraid. Let's go. So that's the kind of mentality I have. So it felt like a group. When it happened, obviously, Steffi was the one. She was like, you know, leading the charge. Rob was very vocal and Nicole was very vocal. Probably the two individuals who said the least was Mike and Maba. Mm-hmm. I think they were just almost like, wow, let's just stay out of the way. You know, almost like the Sandra Diaz-Tuan, anybody but me.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to go for a jog, that's fine by me. They were, and Rob and Nicole were the big pushers for nobody's allowed to talk to me, which in retrospect, it's laughable because there were so many times where they pulled me aside and be like, okay, Jacques, how do you plan on using your idol, or what's going to be our play, or have you found another idol? I'm like, aren't we not allowed to have his lone one? Like, nah, it doesn't matter right now. But when Durao and I would go hunting crabs, you know, Rob would appear out of nowhere and be like, yeah, just to make sure you guys aren't talking strategy. So it's a bit of a double standard for me in terms of, you know, but it's an argument of, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. You know, whoever lays down the law can put it in writing in any way they want to. That's in terms of individuals how it was perceived.
And something we also spoke about at the time was, you know, you're obviously very apologetic, but you actually seem genuinely guilty about using the word. And I think we all agreed at the time there was really nothing wrong with you using the word. And was there kind of that weird mentality because you're in this environment and they're all, yeah, like, did you feel guilt about it and then kind of see later that was, you were in a fog, or did you kind of know from the beginning that you'd done really nothing wrong?
Shannon, 100% I agree with you. That's such a brilliant, you almost hit the nail on the head. So people asked me before the season, being a super fan, you know, they think that's to your detriment. And this is the only incident where I must honestly say being a super fan had an impact on the game in a negative way for me playing, because once that happened, and it's very weird, like once that happened, like probably 10 seconds into it happened, I realized I need to now shut my mouth, because I went back to Survivor Game Changers and what happened at the whole Zeke episode, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So for me, Survivor is not, it's not a reality TV show. It's almost like a pseudo sport.
Yeah.
But not a lot of people are in it for the drama and the reality TV of it. I think there's a massive difference between this and Keeping Up with the Kardashians or whatever other reality shows there are. But this is not the reality that I think anybody enjoys. And this is, it's crossed that line that happened in Game Changers, where you're like, a certain individual said something that they regret and like, uh-oh. And instead of digging yourself deeper into taking the shovel and digging yourself deeper into a hole, just stand your ground and throw the shovel away. That's the best you can do. And that's what I thought, the way they acted, I thought I said something insanely offensive. And they certainly made me felt like that. I mean, both during the incident and afterwards, you know. It's only watching it back that I'm like, not that I'm saying maybe it was a bit disrespectful, but it's almost laughable watching it back. I mean, people swear all the time, and I have a fun nugget for you at the end regarding this as well. But what happened with the Zeke thing, I it was like, it's like plastered onto my frontal lobe when that happened. I'm like, oh shucks, this is going to be exactly like that incident. And whatever you do, don't say anything more. Just walk away. Say you're sorry. Go sleep in the hammock and disengage from the situation. Because from my perspective and my point of view, I can only make it worse, right? You understand what I'm saying? And they made me felt like I was the guilty party for long, and I felt it even for a while after the show. And it's only watching it back that I'm like, yeah, it wasn't really that bad. But at the time, that's how I viewed it, and that's where being a super fan actually had a bit of an effect on me.
Yeah, it just absolutely kills me to think that there's like I don't even know. Like, it just kills me to think that, like, the game that I love made you feel these things, you know, and that.
It's fine.
And that, yeah, I know. Like, it happened 6 months ago. I feel like I'm your coworkers now. Like, but like, it was a lot, and it's so real. And the fact that it made you feel that. And feel the guilt and feel that it was in a Vana situation. Like, you know, it's not, obviously, it's not even, you can't even put in the same conversation, but it just kills me to think that.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's horrible. And again, I will just say all the power to you. Because I don't know what I would do in that situation. And I think that, you know, the fact that you were able to not only fight through it, and what I would love to talk to you about is, I want to pull a Rob and ask you about what you were doing with your idol. Because I mean, honestly, like, I think that anyone, especially facing that amount of just, you know, social pressure, could throw in the towel. And you decide to once again, you know, channel the season after the Varner Zeke incident. You're going to pull a Ben Dreiberg in here. Yes. And you're going to go to tribal council and you're going to say, I'm playing my idol right now. I want to see people scramble. Unfortunately, you got the exact.
Unfortunately, exactly. No, look, I definitely pull out, like you say, the Ben Dreiberg, not because I want to do something flashy at tribal council and, you know, play for the TV. Quite the contrary. I'm not allowed to play the game, right? Nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to talk strategy. You saw that scene where they're talking and I come up and I'm like, yo, can I sit here? They're like, no, go away. And then that almost sadistic smile of, you know, look what we've reduced this guy to. So nobody wants to talk to me. And I'm like, well, that's fine. If nobody wants to talk to me, let's go. I'm cool. So I'm, once again, I'm in this dark place. I'm like, what is the only way out of this? And that is to have this conversation in a public place. You know, if you want to do the hostage exchange, in a public place where, you know, everybody can see what's happening. So I'm like, well, we wait in the tribal council. It's 5 minutes in. I tell Nico, well, I'm playing it now. Okay. Obviously, and... like you say, it's not as nobody's like doing any kind of, you know, or gasps. There's none of that. Everybody's just like, okay, whatever, we just stick to the plan. And I'm like, I'm almost doing a double take. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you all okay with this? I mean, one of you, there's a sucker at the table who's going home. Who is it?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, no, we're just sticking to the plan.
This is peak.
So I say. Exactly. So definitely didn't have a desired effect. But I mean, if you can't talk strategy, instead of just playing it afterwards, I will at least give an individual a chance to say, okay, let's talk now, guys, because something's amiss. At least question something and be like, if you want to do a move, I mean, I will join you. Let's talk about it now in an open forum. Let's go. Nobody takes, though, and wants to, you know, take a slice of the cake I'm putting down. And almost like, I think watching it back, I should have fought harder, like, you know, pushed the issue home. But I was so, like I said, I was in such a dark place. And I'm like, okay, I did all I can. I pushed as hard as I can. If you guys don't want to play ball, then one of you deserves to go. I'll just take a back seat and see how this plays out. By the way, I'm voting Rob. If you all want to join me, that's plan. I'm out.
Why Rob though? Because you said that you know thought he had an idol. Like, why not back to Steffi for the same reasons you've targeted her before?
Because obviously, but then Rob was the one who was like, you know, nobody's allowed to speak strategy, but he's allowed to speak strategy for me. And it's clear to everybody up until then, you know, it was always like smoke and mirrors of who's running the show. But by then it was, you know, clear it's Rob running the show. I'm like, there's 8 people left. We have to take him out. And I knew if I wrote down his name and let's say if it was a split vote or whatever, he would have played his idol. And that would at least open an avenue. Obviously, there's going to be a revote. Or, you know, and then in the next round, the guy's vulnerable, so people can go start going after him. So it was almost like, not that I wanted to bluff him into playing his idol, but if whoever else wants to do something, let's take out this guy. Not let's take him out, let's get him to play his idol, let's revote, and then the next round, whoever goes home, we can, you know, get together. But like I said, it felt there were too many people were okay with playing not to win, playing not to lose instead of playing to win. Yeah.
Well, on that note, not only do people not go along with your plan, you see, despite saying, I'm playing this idol right now, 2 people still vote for you. When you go back to camp, did you get a sense as to who voted for you? And what was your reaction to actually seeing that happen?
Okay, so just a step back. Mike, obviously, he's scared of his rewards, right? So he mentioned it to me. He's like, Rob has a reward, so it's making things... Rob has an advantage against, it's making things difficult. And I'm like, what advantage does he have? He's like, yeah, no, he's very shifty about it. I'm like, Mike, do you fully understand this advantage? He's like, no, I've just heard this.
No one understood it totally.
I'm like, Mike, did he show you the note? He's like, no. I'm like, dude, whatever advantage you receive, there's going to be a note. So go back to Rob and ask him, where the hell's the note? Like, see it in black and white before you just get intimidated. Because I've pulled smoke and mirror moves this game as well. It's very easy. Just ask this dude, where's the note? Like, similar to when they ask me, do you have an idol? I'm like, yeah, here's the notes. And I show it to them. They're like, okay. I'm like, go back to Rob and ask, where's the note? It's like, no, it doesn't work like that. Didn't understand. So I said, okay. So Mike, from his argument, wants to stay in Rob's good books, right? Because he's afraid Rob's going to read the votes. And I only saw this in retrospect, the whole cancel the plan thing, which is a very comical moment. Singing jingle bells, canceling the plan. Maba, to this day, I cannot tell you. I think Maba is a she's a cool human. I just think, like, Survivor's not really a thing. Like, she didn't have that X factor you needed. And I still don't know what she thought was going to happen. She thought the plan was Letitia. I'm like, okay. And it's like, yeah, maybe they're going to read a vote, so she wants to keep it in my... I don't know. I mean, maybe Mike's the best. You say you're going to speak to Mike later. Maybe Mike's the guest guy to ask.
Okay, I kind of still get it from Mike's perspective. Like, yeah. Anyway, you know, they thought Letitia was going home. They thought she was a split vote, and they didn't want to seem super shady by changing their vote at the last minute. Yeah. So they just did, you know, they wanted people to think they were falling in line because they thought they had a flip. But I mean, definitely the optics, not great.
Yeah. No, for sure. And like I said, I had up until then the worst move of the season, but I'm very thankful for Maba for helping me out, you know, bumping it down to number two.
Mm, so
here you are, last gasp. Here you go.
Last gasp. Yeah.
Gotta find an idol no matter what. You've searched fruitlessly. We see those poor shots of the idol in the background while you're searching. You're going to find out, obviously, later from the jury that Letitia ended up finding the idol that you needed. Looking back on that, when you found that out, what was your reaction?
Yo, no, that was... Look, I'm not one of those people who in life feel like, if I can't get a promotion, you shouldn't get it as well. I'm like, I was super happy when I found out that Tisha had an idol. I'm like, what? That's insane. I'm so glad for her. So, I'm not salty or angry towards her for getting it. Obviously, I was extremely close. And I mean, I was looking at it for a long while. I was searching at all kinds of places. I mean, they show a 30-second montage of me walking up and down that beach for days searching for that idol. Seeing Letitia find, I mean, who would have guessed? And it's such a thing of Survivor where it's literally a game of inches. You know, sometimes you can be in the right spot 99% of the time, and then that 1%, you know, and she's just looking there. That's the way the game is, and that's why it's such an unpredictable show. I know a lot of people are against the constant reintroduction of the idols. You know, they don't want somebody to bend Dreeberg all the way to the end. But I had a sense they're gonna place it somewhere, and I kept looking around. I was looking under the shelter, and it was this funny bit where all the staffs are against the chicken coop, and I'm like, maybe it's underneath the chicken coop. So I pick it up, and then all the staffs fall over and break. And then, like, out of nowhere, like, the art department comes in, takes the staff back. They have to fix the staffs. It's like 2 hours until tribal council. Everybody's like, don't worry about it. Just play the game. They don't care. They're just like, just you do you, dude. So it was a fun bit of running up and down. It played out how it played out.
Yeah, let's talk about also this, like, kind of half auction Yankee swap thing that you get to do. And you end up not stealing Island of Secrets with your reward steal, which we know you could have done after. We know that you're, you know, at this point, you probably really, really need your wife. Unfortunately, you are going to find out, which I want to hear about, that Steffi got to see Jean on Island of Secrets. So you would have had that opportunity. What was your thought process then in, you know, obviously not stealing it?
Sure. Look, Shannon, like I told you, I was in a very dark space for a while now where nothing else mattered. And for me, I was obviously I knew I could steal it, but and never in a million years. I don't think. I mean, I've watched most of the US seasons. Never in a million years has been like a family reward before the reward. Yeah. I don't think that's ever happened. So that didn't even remotely cross my mind that, you know, maybe, you know, there's somebody there waiting for me on the island. So I said, you know what, similar to what I said when I'm going all in on the idol move, I'm like, listen, I can win an immunity or somebody can change their mind, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I am, and that's ironic because if I played to win, if I played to win the game, I would have saw her, but that was the first time in the game after the whole incident where I was like, I don't care about anything. I'm like, it's hard enough for me to wake up in the morning and just stay on the beach and not, you know, phone production, be like, yo, I don't want to be here anymore. So that alone took so much effort and internal energy that I was so laser focused on the only person I can see or who can get me out of a space is Haley. And I'm going to, you know, close my eyes and just hope that whatever happens, I can see her. And that's the reason. Obviously, like I said, if you played with Pure Logic, that's 100% the best move. I'm not even denying it. But I think you need to understand in what headspace I was, and that's why Survivor is different from something like Big Brother, where, and it's not a chess game. You don't always, you know, just play with logic. You're tired, and I don't want to go on that train of, oh, you're tired and you don't sleep, but I was in a headspace that I've never been in, and nothing else mattered. So I'm like, if I don't see her, then so what? I don't see her, but I'm at least going to give myself a shot to be able to see her when I do get that opportunity.
I do think it's definitely like one of the more heartbreaking ironies in Survivor history, because you come in as a strategic super fan, the logical person, right? Like, that's your thing. And then the game strips that of you, and it actually turns into this thing that you probably didn't expect it to, definitely wouldn't have expected it to be, and what it can really be at its core, which is not logic and not strategy. And then you have to follow within that path, within your own decisions, just to survive. And ironically, if it had allowed you to be the logical thing, you would have got what you needed. Like, it's actually this, like, beautiful and heartbreaking irony.
It is.
I don't, you know, I don't begrudge it. I mean, obviously, you know, being where you've been and what you'd experienced, for me to say, you know, it really just isn't chess. So I totally get what you were thinking.
So on that note as well, you know, as we get into your ultimate vote out, finally, they pinned you down and they got you. You know, this is when Rob does a really interesting thing of like, okay, we want to make sure that if there are idols going around, we want to control where Jacques' vote is. So this is where he gets Mike and Darrow to vote for Steffi alongside you. I know that when you left the game, you said, okay, one of Nicole, Darrow, and Mike didn't vote with me. I would love to hear, because I'm assuming this is also going to inform your ultimate jury vote, a little bit more about your relationship specifically with Nicole and why you thought up until the moment you left that she might have voted with you.
No, look, we'll definitely get to that. When we get back from the MABA vote, like, there's this whole, in retrospect, it's an act, but there's this whole thing of Rob's like, why did you guys vote for MABA? Who? Nicole acts super surprised. She's like, shouldn't it have been Leticia? And then she comes to me and is like, Jacques, listen, my own people are betraying me. They don't want to work with me. I'm out. I'm not trusting them anymore. I don't want to work with them. Let you and me go to the end. I'm like, okay, cool.
See, that feels so unnecessary, but I guess it works.
It's fine, you know? Yeah. But I mean, and that's testament to the game. And that's, you'll see that when I actually, and this isn't shown in the episode, I actually go, I'm like, okay, Nicole, this is my last roll of the dice. I've told Mike this, and I'm going to tell you this now. I've got this reward still. If we get to the family visit, I mean, now I'm at a point where originally I'm like, I would just take the winner. But now I'm like, I've got nothing else to give to you. I've got nothing else except this one last piece of parchment in my bag. If you are willing to work with me, we can at least spend a day together, me with my wife, you with your boyfriend, and Corbus or whoever. I don't know how many people get to choose when that event's coming up. We can at least have that moment. I mean, I've got nothing else. I mean, if I go home, I go home. But if we do this, this is my last roll of the dice. Are you down? And she's like, yeah, she's definitely down. Initially, she's like, no, how do I know this is true? And I'm like, Nicole, I've never once, you know, emotionally manipulated people. I've got nothing else to give. This is my last roll of the dice. And she's like, oh, okay, no, she's in. Definitely, she doesn't trust Rob anymore. She's down to see a loved one. Let's go. She's in. Boom. Locked in. Go. obviously in the voting confessional, she writes down my name with a carrot and says, you know, her family is not a carrot to be you know, teasing in front of her nose, which was my objective. From my point of view, it was just I had no other card left to play. I've taken these three cards and flipping bluffed so many hands. This is my last roll of a dice. If you are willing to go with me, let's go. And she was like, Jock, I'm 100% in. Let's do it. I can't wait for the four of us to braai or have hot dogs. I'm like, that's cool. So that's why even at Ponderosa, and we'll get to this when we discuss the final vote. Even at Ponderosa, I'm like, yo, Nicole is probably with me. Must have been Michael Grau flip. But yeah.
And so, you know, you've gone from this like kind of traumatic incident. You've now been voted out. Like, what is your mental state then to kind of getting out of that situation? Like, you react to it really with a lot of class. But, you know, what's your emotions there?
Look, for me, it's almost like it went full circle. Like, I got to be on the show. I got to play Survivor. I was involved in all those moves, blindsides, being blindsided, all of that. And then being on the jury, I'm like, wow, this is cool. I'm going to now have, you know, a week with all these people. And that, and then you guys have probably heard this with other exit interviews as well, but that's like an experience in itself, just being able to decompress. And I must say, like, right up until the point where Mike comes, before Steffi, it really is a bunch of really fun, cohesive people. Like, if you want the real party started and you get, you know, me, Kubis, Maba, Sipe, Dante, those are really cool people. So being on the jury and being able, and this is why I tell Kubis that, Kubis, I need to tell you, Ting Ting was actually a doctor all along. We wanted to get you out and we were all laughing about it. Sipe and I share probably one of the most beautiful moments in my life. We sit on the deck in front of one of those chalets. I think it's a night, maybe, but Steffi got voted out where they're doing interviews with Steffi, and she's not allowed in the room, so she sits with me on our patio, and we're like on this, it's like the edge of the world. Like, it's just sea in a panoramic view. The deck we're sitting on is like over the ocean, and the stars are like right there, and we have this beautiful moment, and she's upset about the whole incident thing, and she is asking me about it, and she starts crying, and I'm like, Sipe, it's fine. Reconnected with Dante, you know, he said, oh, he was rooting for me all along. So being able to reconnect with all these people, it was really a very cool experience. An amazing week. We had a lot of fun.
Well, let's talk about the Steffi side of things, because we spoke about it. Might be one of the most eventful Ponderosas I've seen ever. International and domestic Survivor. And the interesting thing about it is, you know, she gets to the jury, and from what I observed, everyone else was the ones that were really laying into her. And maybe this is to the point that you made before about like when you were sort of had to be the ones to comfort your friends and family ultimately when the incident aired. It seemed like you were sort of doing, like, you didn't say a word when they ended up laying into Steffi. And I'll admit, you know, we didn't know about your relationship until you posted that little postmortem on Reddit. Yeah. But, you know, at the Final Four Tribal Council, you two are like laughing with each other, giving looks to each other, which was totally a surprise. So I guess talk to us through what your opinions were once Steffi sort of faced the firing squad, and then how did you two end up coming back together once all that happened?
Look, for me, I felt like it's almost like I was too personally involved that I wanted to, not be part of this conversation. Because I mean, I was there and I've already answered all the questions and I've had those discussions with those people. But obviously the jury wanted answers. And I know Dante, he was like, Dante and Jeffrey. Jeffrey, because it's almost like Jeffrey, you see him he's a bit of a bitter juror, let's be real. but Dante is one of those people, he's like, there's right and wrong in the world. And don't, you know, you can take the easy road or the right road. And, you know, these people are taking the easy road. And it was seeing Dante, I mean, I felt bad for Steffi. There was a moment, I mean, she was crying, and very internal in the Ponderosa video. But there was this moment, I think, like, she was crying, and she was like, yeah, she can't really think because she's crying. And Dante's like, listen, don't do this. Tomorrow, I promise you, I will be the first person to give you a hug and we can, you know, continue our lives. But right now, crying is not going to help. Let's have this discussion. Let's go. You, me, right now. And he just kept going and going and going. It's weird because I think you also need to understand Steffi to understand how that whole thing played out. Steffi in her life she's an athlete. She went to the Olympics or whatever, and she's a fitness model. And in her life, if you fail, just go back and try harder, right? You didn't gym enough. That's why you lost. This is one of the situations in life where you actually need finesse and to be able to not just brute force your way through. And she couldn't do it in the situation. I mean, she just had to start taking this beating. And I must say, I was impressed by all the people. I mean, it's literally like Dante said, everybody wanted the answers. They asked the questions, very valid questions. They're like, okay, but like Dante said, like, you said you're sorry, you said you're sorry. What's the difference between the two?
Mm-hmm.
But when that was all said and done, everybody was like, okay, we had the conversation. It's a clean slate. Let's go on with our lives. Tomorrow, the sun's going to come up. We're going to do something fun at Ponderosa. And the next day, we were all fine. So I think we were all very mature in the way we handled the situation, in the sense of people wanted answers. They got it. And we said, okay, now we're on equal footing. And we moved on.
Yeah, and definitely from this jury that we saw, you know, so many facial reactions throughout the whole time. And then they do vote entirely for Robin and Cole. And like, from your perspective, what you went through, I mean, I would not have begrudged you at all not voting for them. Obviously, you have to vote for someone who was involved in some capacity. But if Robin and Nicole were more involved in that, you know, for you to vote for Darrell, I would not begrudge that at all, because that's your lived experience. But, you know, having been on the jury, what really was the sentiment? Who were people rooting for? Who do you think that people wanted to vote for in your time there?
So during the end of the game, Letitia got a lot of traction among the jury members. People were like looking for any reason not to vote for Robin Nicole, Steffi included. They're like, it's a joke what this has become, you know, where it's two people running the show. And I think that's the difference between, you know, maybe what you guys saw and how we experienced it. But we couldn't differentiate between the two of them. A lot of people say, Steffi and I are angry at Rob. That's why we didn't vote for him. And that's not true at all. It just, we were rooting for anybody to flip the script. It's like, you see so many weeks, like everybody's speaking like, yeah, tonight we're going to make a move. And then they don't. Next week is the time. And then they don't. So
but as a juror, were you satisfied that they flipped the script on Steffi at the final five? Like, I know it was them doing it, but at least it was like a break from what it should have been.
Yeah, that was a brilliant move. I think I don't think Steffi would have won if you sit in the end with any combination except maybe Darrell, and if it's final two. Steffi, she wasn't so liked by the people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think they made a good decision in getting out a potential strategic a physical threat that could win the challenge and, you know, upset their plan for a final two with Darrell, or final three. Yeah.
So let's get to this final tribal council, because you end up being the first one to get up. And I'm sure as a super fan, you know, even though it was disheartening to have you go to the jury, I'm sure you were thinking about like, OK, I've seen X number of jury statements in the history of Survivor. What am I going to say? And you make two very interesting choices. The first, and you benefit from speaking first, at least from the edited perspective, tells Darrell not only is he not going to win, but he is the textbook definition of what not to do in Survivor. And your second point, much like you mentioned before, is Robin Nicole, just FYI, we can't tell the two of you apart, so own your games. Talk to me about the strategy behind the points that you picked in terms of, you know, why you decided to make those specific statements.
Mike, this is brilliant. I'm so glad you asked this, because a lot of people want to know. And this is maybe another inside scoop, which you're not going to get on some random Reddit thread. While we were playing, obviously a lot of people not big Survivor fans, the last season they watched before they came out was season 6, you know, the one with Jean and Tom at the end. And as we were playing, whenever something would happen, whenever somebody would get like a clue or an advantage or food or whatever, they'd say, oh, this is luck. And then immediately everybody would shun them. We're like, no, it's not luck. You worked for this. You did this. Don't claim luck.
Oh my God.
You saw what happened to Jean when she claimed luck. Like, if Jean claimed the move, she would have won. So don't claim luck. Just claim your move. And it's weird that it happened like multiple times, like 3 or 4 or 5 times. There's something that happened. And I realized, sitting at Ponderosa, staring out over the ocean, that what happened in the previous season, in the final tribal council, had an effect on our season. Okay. Mm. So I also then thought, okay, well, here's an opportunity. If you go and completely discredit an individual for the way they played, people in the next season are going to look at our season and be like, you don't want to do this, because this is not the way you play Survivor. And this is the way you get 0 votes. So I almost, like, when I said that, it's not because, I mean, if you tell me, Jacques, you have to go drink a beer between Rob, Nicole, and Drau, I would shoot Drau. He's such a cool lacquer. Oh, I really enjoy him. But as a survivor player, you know, deciding, okay, I'm going to spill all the information towards one individual without making moves, without giving myself a chance to win, to break down everybody else's chance to win and give that individual a win. I'm not saying Rob didn't deserve to win. I think the best person won. But the Rouse game was so, it hamstrung so many other people's games, and not to his own benefit, just because he didn't want to, you understand what I'm saying? It's difficult for me to verbalize it, but that's what we thought as a jury from somebody like Drau. And I thought, okay, if you completely discredit Drau's game very vocally, and this somehow makes the final cut and it's shown on the TV next year, people will not, whenever people, a person has this opportunity to flip or just casually give away information for no reason, they will look back and say, no, this didn't work. And then you're going to have a more fluid season. So, yes, that is the super fan in me having a very meta way of thinking about the game from experiencing it, how we experienced last year's episode and last year's season. And that's the reason for the Drau statement.
Wow. That's super interesting. I haven't thought about, like, that's all the way back in, like, Borneo and Survivor Australia in terms of people thinking about, like, how will future people look upon this season. But I guess to your point, people were so firmly ensconced in the Philippines season that I can imagine whatever happens with the season 8, there would be people that would be watching this season as well. And you might have just left the most, like, impressionable recent statement in their heads with that.
Yeah. And looking back, I mean, watching it back, it was a bit harsh. I think it's, and once again, that's a drawback of mine. It's maybe how I said it, not what I said. I could have been, you know, let the guy down a little bit easier. But I think the gist of what I wanted to say is, a game like this garners zero respect from a jury. So please don't do it in the future, people watching at home. And then we could have just, you know, obviously I was a bit rough on Drau. But yeah, then, and to your second question, Mike, then we have to decide, you know, is it Rob or Nicole? And that's when you know, I bring out all the analogies of how intertwined the games are. And it took a while for them to actually, because there was this kumbaya vibe where Rob is like, I couldn't have done this without Nicole. And Nicole's like, I couldn't have been without Rob. And Rob says, if he win, he wants to give the money to Nicole. And I'm like, you can't give the money away because that's against the rules. You have to use it for yourself. And everybody's like, oh, we didn't know that. And there's this weird thing which just keeps going on and on. And then I think, once again, Dante is, because I think what you might perhaps, whether it's news to you, it was each person having a statement or a question, and then it went through that. But afterwards, it was like an open forum. Then, you know, we spoke, you know, upfront about a lot of stuff. So that way it wasn't shown on the episode, but that's how it went down. And Dante is like, okay, guys, I'm going to be real with you. Drau didn't have a chance of winning. Jacques was right. But now, the way things stand, I'm voting for Drau, because you two are so intertwined that I cannot understand which one of you I'm voting for Drau as it is right now. Let's continue with the show. And then people were like, uh-oh. And you can see Rob and Nicole. And then, like, as we go on, they start, you know, being a bit more claiming and putting a stake down and saying, this is what I did, or this is what that person did. Then they actually start owning the games a lot more.
Just to restate that, because this is something I think we found out behind the scenes, but I don't think our audience is privy to it. So, yeah, we talked in the finale podcast about how, you know, they had gone back to the older Final Tribal Council format of, okay, jurors individually address, stand up and individually address the finalists, instead of the newer format, which they used last season of, okay, everyone just sort of has an open discussion. And apparently, and Jacques, you can attest to this, they used both. And I guess just due to what happened, they chose to go with the first half of the Final Tribal Council rather than both halves.
Yeah, I think some of the later answers are maybe edited into the reactions we get. But I think this is obviously it was like a 3.5-hour tribal council, right? So you can't get that. I think the tribal council was 20 minutes, which is long for a final tribal council as is, but we got 10 jurors. But I think this is the way we did it was very cool, because each person has a point of view from where they're coming from or what they're basing their vote on or a statement to make. And then from there, you get into a lot of discussion. So for instance, we did discuss the whole MoFo incident that came up, and we had a whole, you know, chat about that, which didn't make the final cut. we spoke about, like I said, we spoke about the Dante saying, okay, you guys need to make a move. We spoke about so many other things, but that was a good enough platform where I think that hybrid, sure, you lose maybe out in terms of screen time of capturing it, but in terms of getting answers out of the two people or three people left in the game, I think this format works brilliantly.
Yeah, so what about Nicole's answers obviously get you to vote for her?
So I think it's one of those things where if you watch a Survivor, you know, a challenge victory, it looks massively impressive. You know, you slam down the last piece of a puzzle, you put your hands up, you know, you scratch, oh, you know, Rob wins immunity, and that looks really spectacular. Or if you play an idol, if you fire an advantage, those things, it portrays the gravitas of that gets put onto, you know, you can visualize it on the TV screen. But for 39 days, being in somebody's ear and making them think that you are their number one, you don't really see that social skills so easily on TV. And that's what I think. If you go back and you watch like the Ponderosas or Exit Press, I mean, J3 thought Nicole was his number one or his number two. Kubus thought, you know, Nicole was his number two. Mike thought Nicole was his number two. Myself thought Nicole was a number my number two. Steffi thought Nicole was her number one and number two. Maba thought she had a good thing going with Nicole. So when I sat back and I realized every single person thought Nicole was their number one. And she was so good at doing that. She was such a brilliant player where if she knew Jeffrey was going home, she would sit with him, do laundry, wash his clothes, wash his back, be like, no, don't worry, Jeffrey, you're fine. We're voting out Maba. She's going home. Don't worry about this. She spent the whole afternoon with him, not making sure, you know, he's scrambling around, making last-minute plans, flipping the apple cart, looking for idols, any of that kind of nonsense. And for me, looking at the two of them, you know, obviously we didn't see a lot of Rob's confessionals of how he was controlling the game or manipulating the players. From my vantage point, I saw a stacked jury bench, every single person thinking Nicole was in number two and not flipping because she made them comfortable. And I'm like, that is an insane skill. And I just thought that was a better way of getting to the end than Rob's, you know, because he just won a couple of challenges and, you know, make up a fake advantage and people fell in line. So I thought, well, Nicole's game is better. And that's what I voted for. It's as simple as that.
Well, when everything concluded, you know, you were one of four people to vote for Nicole. And obviously it's going to be a hot second until the vote actually gets revealed. But did you have any sort of semblance as to whether one person won over the other at that time?
Look, I obviously knew that they didn't draw, right? I mean, then we would have had a ghost That's island true. Kind of vibe, yeah. So, and we didn't discuss. I didn't discuss it with people. I felt like when I put my vote in the urn, I put the lid on Survivor, and I walked away, and I didn't really want to chat about the show with the players or the jury members. But seeing how a lot of people, somebody like Dante had zero time for Nicole. Jeffrey had zero time for Nicole. And there were times at Tribal Council where I was almost advocating for her. Where I was like, guys, listen, you can dislike this individual, whatever you want, but you cannot disregard the fact that the way she kept you from not running around, make you sit where you are, that's great gameplay. So take the personal stuff out of this and just think about this logically. I was actually advocating for her quite hard. But I think, and as the show went on and you saw it's a bit of a Rob show, I realized it's going to be maybe, you know, a 6-4 or a 7-3. And I think looking back, I think a 6-4 result for the way they played, I know the edit doesn't necessarily portray it as such, but I think from my perspective, how I saw the game and how I saw the two of them play, a 6-4 result, 6-4-0 for the three of them with Rob as a winner is probably the best outcome of the season.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I definitely think we've seen that for Nicole. And it's interesting because of Nicole's game. It's like the problems with what she's doing there are problems because they'll upset a jury. But if they don't upset a jury, then it's fantastic gameplay, right? Like, because you have to think about that jury management. But then ironically, or kind of it's in this like self-fulfilling prophecy, if the jury is okay with that, then she's just pulled off this incredible manipulation with no downsides because the jury is still into it. So there's definitely stuff to be credited there. And we know from everything you said in that tribal council that it was purely, you know, strategic. You had no more reason to be upset at Rob than Nicole.
Yeah,
you know, maybe even vice versa. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I should have been upset if anybody, I would have voted Durao. But yeah. I mean, that was never going to happen. So for me, I purely thought Nicole's game was better. And it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward a bit to the reunion, because, you know, you ultimately did not end up winning the Mahindra car, but you end up being in the top three for the fan favorite. And again, I'd love to hear from, like, both your perspective and a super fan's perspective. What was your reaction to finding out that your characterization and your journey on Survivor had left such a mark on the public?
I was surprised. I mean, I like you mentioned earlier, I knew there was some sympathy after the whole incident, but I mean, I was playing such bad Survivor for so many weeks in a row. I mean, the Ting Ting vote, and then the slide puzzle, which I can't finish in 90 minutes, and that's just laughing stock. And there were so many bad moments in my game, and times where I thought I knew what was going on, but I didn't, with the Sipo vote. So I was massively surprised when my name popped on the screen. I'm like, what? Who's these people? And where are they coming from? No, it was quite a great testament, and it was just such a blessing to play the game. I didn't go to win the million. I didn't go to get the title. I didn't go to win a car. I went to play Survivor. And ironically, I think me having that kind of mindset, you know, a lot of people appreciated that. And I'm fortunate and grateful to have been a part of this and to be so well received by the public. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you mentioned the note that you kind of wrote and put out online thanking everyone and the people that you left out. I mean, I wouldn't, I guess, bring it up, but you did. So I guess I will, yeah. You know, the people that were left out. What? Yeah, I guess why is my question.
You want me to throw shade on the people, Shannon?
I mean, I guess people have asked and you did bring it up, so.
Yeah, sure. Okay, the Rocker one, I don't want to go too deep.
Yeah, the Rocker one, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's an individual that I really want to be there. Leticia and I, it's weird. We had an incident around the middle of the game where everybody swore, and she swore in probably every confessional she had. You can see how many times. And she kept hammering on that throughout the game. And I'm like, Leticia, I didn't say it like that. The bitch was like, yeah, okay, I forgive you. And then afterwards, she's like, no. So that whole thing for me, I'm like, listen, I'm only so many times I'm going to say I'm sorry, but if you keep taking this one thing I said and putting it out of context, at some point in time, I'm going to break, right? I mean, I'm one of those individuals where if I meet you, I give you the benefit of a doubt and I open my heart and my life. And if you misuse that, then so be it. So Leticia and I, we had that weird thing happened, wasn't shown. And it wasn't a big thing. It's just it irritated me where whenever something she just continuously brought it up, and I'm like, at some point in time, I'm like, I'm done. I can't anymore. If this is what you believe, then you can believe this. I'm out. That's why she's not on the list. Rob and Nicole, it's not because some people say, oh, Jock can't stand to lose against them, so he's not going to write anything.
Who
it's not that
you voted for Nicole and you exactly. Said Durao could never win. Like
exactly,
you gave me a vote.
No, Shannon, for me, look, and I know it's difficult because you should always see somebody in the game for who we are in the game and then out of the game for who we are out of the game. But two things about Nicole is everybody, when they voted somebody out, they were almost like gracious about it, or they would compliment the other person saying, Dante, I'm voting for you because you're such a threat. You're a warrior. I can't go up against you. Best of luck, man. Cheers. Every time Nicole voted somebody out, and there's no there's cameras there, but nobody can hear it, so you don't have to impress anybody. You can just show a bit of yourself and be vulnerable for a minute. And she kept saying these things like, oh, Dante, you are so arrogant, you are vile, you are, you know, tough exterior, but on the inside. And she kept getting very personal watching the confessionals. Same thing she said to me when I was just being sincere and be like, Nicole, I'll take you on this thing. She said that my family is not a carrot. And after the incident, and this is where Rob comes in, after the incident, and I'm like, I said I'm sorry, and I didn't really engage with people about it on the internet. I whenever somebody mentioned that, I'd stay far away. But they kept hammering home this point on social media of like, it's not what Jock said, it's how he said it, and still, you know, trying to get the world to understand that what they did was right, and they still stand by the words. And for me, I'm like, if you still feel that way after all we've been through, and I've said sorry and you've said sorry, but you still feel you need to justify that you were right, that's okay with me, really. I'm gonna be, you know, cautious to you, and I'll be friendly. But for me, I don't see us post game envisioning a journey together. And if that is the thing you want to do after the game, if maybe juxtapose Steffi next to this. Steffi was probably the biggest instigator, and she's the one who said, "I'm sorry, I was wrong." And I'm not saying I'm Jacques, I'm going to lay down the law. If you don't come apologize, you're not in my books, not at all. But I think that's maybe a great example where Steffi was willing to say, "I was wrong," and I said, "I was wrong as well." And we both say, "Sorry, we were in such a weird mental state. Let's forgive and forget and move on." And we did. And we're good friends now. Like I say, they still need to beat that drum. And this is what it is.
Mm. I think that your game does kind of encapsulate all of the social experiment parts of Survivor. And again, I think it's completely ironic because you're the one going out there to play it like a game. And that would be your mentality. And you've become kind of the symbol of what maybe the whole season was, which was that it's way more than chess. And that's why some of these things happen. You know, your status as a super fan and where you kind of sit in the fandom now, how has it been affected by your time in the show?
Look, for me, maybe it's just my Survivor brain. I'm glad it's done, and I wanna almost disengage a bit from Survivor, and I don't read a lot of the preseason stuff for the next season, but I can't help but think of a season and not start to put parallels or comparisons to previous seasons. I mean, if you look at how our season played out against something like Ghost Island, very similar concepts where there's this island people get sent to by chance or by a draw, whatever, they come back, two people running the show. So I'm almost still in that space where I'm comparing our season to how it played out like Ghost Island or what's the advantages of going to Tribal Council early. So I'm still in a weird way analyzing it. That's just the Survivor fan in me. But I'm super grateful to have had the experience, and I'm at the point where I say I just need to take some time off and just enjoy my life, as simple as that sounds.
Mm.
So I guess this begs the question. I mean, again, such an emotionally harrowing experience, something that put you in such a dark place, as you mentioned. If you got the offer to come back, what would be your thinking behind it?
Yo, Mike, putting me on the spot. Look, I said this on radio. There's about a 2% chance I'll go back. No, for me, I'm just going to, once again, put yourself in my shoes from this guy who wants to go and play Survivor. And then I get the chance and I'm super grateful. And then I find idols and advantages and we win challenges. And then I try and make moves and it fails horribly. And then I meet crazy people. I found another idol and we blindside people and I get blindsided. And I make the merge and I found another advantage. And I get to meet all these crucial people and I'm involved in all these crazy sick plays. And finally, after like 3 or 4 rounds, I get voted out. I'm on the jury. I get to experience that. I'm there for a week living in Samoa. I didn't get to see my wife, but I mean, she was on the island. So she had a 10-day trip out to Samoa as well. So for me as a fan, there's nothing left. If you want to win, but that was never my objective. So I think a lot of people who want to go back, I mean, not naming somebody, I don't want to speak on somebody else's behalf on our season, but it's people who are like early boots in the merge, who are players who want to go say, "I didn't get a chance." You think of someone like Meryl or Jeffrey. They tell you, "I wish I can go back. I want to really go back and play." Or you think of somebody like, if you look at millennials versus Gen X, like Michelle, she was this player. She got voted out, merge boot. And she's like, "Oh, I want a second chance. I want to go back and do it." Because they feel that they themselves need it because they didn't get to play the game. For me, it's different because I got to play the game. But at the same token, if they say, "Listen, we're doing like a returning captain, each tribe gets a captain," no thanks. If they're doing fans versus favorites, no thanks. But if they come and say, "Listen, this is Survivor Cambodia, this is Second Chance, this is the scale on which we're going to do it, this is the caliber of players, and it's Marion and Werner and Tony and Dante," then I'll probably say yes. But I think then, not because I feel I need Survivor, almost inversely, because I feel then the season needs me. If I can, I don't sound arrogant when I say that, but that's almost how I'm envisioning it. I don't need Survivor again. Where I think other people feel they need Survivor again, and I'm not in that space.
Mm. Well, I am really glad that we got to, you know, as we clock in at over 3 hours now, like dig into, you know, every part of your game, because obviously the emotional aspect is a big part of your game and a big part of this podcast. And I'm also glad we got to talk about all the strategic elements too, because I don't want your time on the show to kind of be reduced to the incident, because it's not something and you are, you know, you're a super fan, you went out there and you were finding advantages on day one, and I'm really glad we got to talk about everything behind that as well, because it's super important, and I hope that as time goes on, you know, that is actually what's remembered if we can, because that is who I think, you know, you are as a player and who you set out to be as a player. And you know, we really have clocked in now at over 3 hours, but
That being said, now we might have to move into the open forum part of the podcast, right? We're gonna have an open discussion about it.
I love just putting in for the listeners that, you know, because we do these podcasts with the three time zones between the three of us, and it's always like my time zone is 2 a.m. I love, like, you know, just putting that out there for the listeners, but there's no better way that I'd love to, you know, spend a Sunday night than doing this.
Survivor was a big dream of mine, and being on an RHP affiliated podcast is a big stake in. So I appreciate you staying up at 2 a.m. and doing this for me. It's really fun. I'm having a blast.
I don't know. From what I've heard, people have made excellent audition videos at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's a perfect time for Shannon.
Yeah.
Sure.
From all the listener questions, we've really covered everything. But I do have one question we have to ask if we didn't get to it. Kristen Lynott Cole wants to know how your hair is doing.
That's one of the things where I'm like, guys, there are two things in the season where I don't understand the big fuss. The one was my hair and how people, I'm like, yo, do you not see me coming from the ocean? I swam like 200 meters in this challenge. I washed it. It's still in. It's a difficult pain to get out. Sipay spent hours at Ponderosa. She and Jeffrey, the two of them, I would just scratch that purple paint right off. It was quite sore.
They didn't try scratching out like you tried scratching off that insignia on the idol crew, because otherwise, I don't think you want a machete around your hair, Jacques.
More success for sure. And I would not trust me with a machete. I mean, a fine tooth comb is one thing, but a machete is something totally different. The second thing, a lot of people are like, yo, why do you always jump when you go and vote? And I'm like, guys, it's just a quirky thing I do. Why do you all get fixated on this? And they're like, people are like, why do you always jump when you vote?
Someone said on Twitter, jumping Jacques. Did we ever say that on the podcast, or was that a pun we never used?
I don't think we did, but yeah, that's a very late contender for the hashtag.
It's interesting where, you know, the things that our Survivor is such a weird show where there's so many things happening, and then people get stuck on, why is this guy's hair purple? And that's like the whole Twitter thread. That's all people are discussing.
Speaking of the hashtag, I was thinking that we should allow Jacques to choose his favorite Jacques pun and make that the hashtag. If you liked any of them, which we've never asked you, were they super insulting, or was it like, were you on board with the Jacques puns or not?
No, I was always laughing. I enjoyed it. I like the one we spoke about now briefly with Jeffrey wanting to throw me. Was it Jacques Tosser or Tossing Jacques?
We had Jacqueline. We had, Jacques Toss. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that was fun.
Jacques Put?
Before we round up this podcast, now we're closing in 3 hours. Can I ask you guys a question? I thought about the season a lot. I want to ask you two a question. Am I allowed to?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is the open forum part of the podcast.
Okay, so I'm allowed to ask questions. Brilliant. I mean, obviously, Mike, you've spoken a lot to a lot of people, and you've seen us play out. One thing I want to ask you, maybe it's just my perspective, but one thing I picked up in our season is people who went to tribal council early on were willing to risk more and play more aggressively than people who didn't get to go early on or at all up until the merge. I mean, if you look back at, let's say, Ghost Island, which I think is a good parable to our season, you look at someone like Chris Noble, hasn't been to single tribal council. I think the merge is his first one, and gets voted out with an idol in his pocket. And we had so many people in our season who had a chance to flip or make big moves. You think of somebody like Letitia or Maba or Mike, and they're people who went to tribal council very late in the season. And then you have somebody like myself and Rob, who, you know, went very early on for a couple of rounds, learned to play the game, was forced by Survivor to play Survivor very early on. You know, him getting a chance to say, okay, if I now take out Paul, I get an idol, me saying, okay, oh, I made a mistake with Ting Ting, next I'm not going to fall under the pressure. I want to hear from you guys. Do you think that's actually like something that you can see from the screen? Because I've heard a lot of people speak about this, but I want to actually hear your opinions before we sign off. It's something I thought about a lot.
Yeah, I think so, that there's been a lot of talk about, you know, being battle hardened, like you said, but I just think I've never thought of it from the perspective you also just gave, which is about like the fear. And I really wonder if that plays in as well, which is like, you go to Tribal Council episode 3, so Ula go episode 1 and 2, they don't go home and it's like, okay, this isn't that bad, we can survive it. But maybe if you aren't going to episode 7, 8, you spend weeks and days kind of building up how scary this thing is in your mind, and maybe you do cling to that safety because you have fear that other people get out of their system.
Well, I also think, I mean, I think it also plays into a bit of the duping as well, that some of these players were able to do, because I think that, and Steven Fishback has spoken about this before, and Jacques, I believe you actually spoke about it during the Misfit period in this season, is that going to Tribal Council is going to bond you in some way, shape, or form. If you vote with somebody, you have now sort of shared this experience of breaking somebody's heart, voting somebody out, which I can imagine, even from a super fan game-oriented perspective, is still a pretty emotional experience, and that bonds you so much more than sitting out there 2 weeks on the beach, you know, not going to Tribal Council and just talking with people and wondering what if. The thing is, when you have these players who haven't experienced Tribal Council, they don't know that connection yet. And so I wonder why, you know, how Mike was able to make such a close connection with Rob is because he hadn't gone to Tribal Council, so he didn't necessarily know. He's like, I'm getting in good with Rob, and he didn't realize that Rob had gone to Tribal Council with, you know, the amigos, which really tightened them up so closely. Mike, he could make a personal connection with, but he hasn't had the connection with him yet of actually working together on a vote. And I do feel like if you're weighing personal versus strategic connection, the latter trumps the former, in that actually voting together with somebody is going to bring you much closer. And the people who didn't go until Tribal Council until much later just didn't realize that. They thought the personal trumped the strategic.
Yeah, I think you make an interesting point about the connections. I like, maybe it's testament to my game. I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, when your spidey senses are tingling off, you know, when is the time to flip, or should I play my idol? But you make a very valid point of, you know, that connection, that battle scars you share, and that tattoo you got when you were out, you know, in the Iraq tour or the Afghan tour or the whatever tour you were, that tattoo is imprinted on your shoulder and on your body shoulder, where this guy you met at the bar, sure, you're friends, but you don't have that same, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that you shared. And it's very valuable. I haven't thought about it like that.
Okay, so 3 hours into this podcast, we have 3 survival podcasters telling any future players to just throw all the early challenges. That is our official recommendation.
now we're expecting more slide puzzle mishaps, and people just standing there on the rain for like 6 hours while all the Felixes complain on the sidelines.
Everyone should play like Nathan. Exactly. All right. So, Jacques, where can people find you on social media to find, you know, maybe you talking about the season or whatever you'll be doing, you know, online?
You can get me at D_Lame. If you're in English, that's D_Lame. That's my Twitter handle. You can get me on Instagram as well. I actually don't.
Not D-Lame, the Simpsons quote. Yeah.
Yeah. That's me. I don't put out any like massive world-renowned podcasts like Mike or stuff like that. I just tweet about my life and, you know, show Instagram pictures of me braying or chilling with my dogs. But if you're really interested in that, dude, hit me up and check me out. My DM is always open.
Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
So I guess we'll start with Survivor South Africa. As I mentioned before, I put out an exit interview with Nicole Capper. Obviously, the length of this one trumps that one. I was very, you know, happy that Nicole was able to allow me in her very busy schedule. So we really did like sort of a rapid fire hour and a half take on her game. She gave some very interesting points, so be sure to check that out. Jacques mentioned all the Survivor Island of the Idols preseason coverage that I've been doing on parade.com/tag/survivor, finishing up the last few player interviews and then getting into a couple of other fun things before the premiere happens. And doing some loss coverage as well, and some Survivor podcasting with the RHAP B&B. But Jacques, I just really want to thank you again, and especially, you know, giving your perspective on everything. I mean, I had tears in my eyes when you were talking about the incident and that place that it put you in, just because I'm someone who, again, has had experience with those emotions. And it's really tough to steel yourself and be able to move on. And I cannot imagine doing that while also playing a strategic game at the same time. So I just wanted to commend you for coming on here and just being so candid about everything, the highs and the lows, the good and the bad about your game, because, you know, as Survivor super fans, we'd love to dig into that stuff, and we can tell you're a true and blue super fan with purple hair, just because, you know, you were able to dig into so much with us just so openly.
Mike, thanks, I appreciate it so much. It's been a real blast, and I don't know what's going to happen in season 8, but if you guys do another podcast and one of you can't fill in, Mike, Shannon, you can definitely fill me. I won't rat you out to your better half, but if you do need me as a sidekick on a podcast, I would gladly spend an hour to chat Survivor with you guys. I would love that. That sounds amazing. Thanks
we
so much
definitely
for
will
me.
Be podcasting about it if we are, you know, if the season is happening, which we hope that it is, and you'll obviously be someone we call up to get on a recap and get into the strategic side. But I, you know, echo Mike's sentiments to really thank you for coming on and sharing like every bit of your game, the strategy side, you know, the emotional path as well, and like all of your honesty in that. And it was, I honestly think, just like an important conversation to have, something that I think should be like requisite listening with the season and for people who watch that and I think were affected by it. It wasn't just the people in your life, you know, it was, I think, all the viewers. And so I really just hope that this podcast, you know, makes the rounds and does resonate with people, because it's super important. But, you know, yeah, we've got some more coming up. We have Mike, as we said, Rob coming up, Jeff and CPA are in the books. I need to schedule those, so hopefully those are happening. On the Australian Survivor Deep Dives, I spoke to Luke Tokey, so that was another amazing one, and I have a couple more people coming up with that as well. So subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, and you won't miss any of those podcasts. Follow Mike at A Mike Bloom Type. Follow me at Shannon Gates. We put out the question threads, share the podcast, so that's how you can keep up to date with it all. But thank you guys so much for listening. You know, hope that you guys enjoyed this podcast and really got something out of it, because I know that I really did. So from the three of us, 3 and something hours into this podcast, thank you so much again, Jacques. Thank you, Mike, as always. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to all the listeners, and we will see you on the next deep dive. Bye.
Bye-bye.